It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and running, on this, the 12th day of May, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between. And the great globe round, no matter where it is that you might be listening live or whatever time it happens to be where you're listening to the podcast. So pop on by. You'll be greeted by early arrivers New Jersey Nick and Squeaky and maybe more to come. And let's see. We will begin the program as we always do with gratitude, because this program happens only because of your determination to keep it on the air, and you have successfully done so for nearly two decades. Oh, hi, I'm Robin. And yes, in case anyone's wondering, this program is live. I'm sorry about yesterday. It had absolutely nothing to do with the election. It had to do with things I had to do. My day started about 5 a.m. yesterday. Boss Man Wayne had some tests at Raleigh General Hospital, and I went over to where he lives, which is about an hour away, and picked him up and took him there, dropped him off, and then I had to take my daughter to a doctor's appointment, and I sat in the parking lot and waited for her to get out, and then I took her back to Oak Hill and got on the road and went back to Raleigh General, picked up Boss Man Wayne, and took him home. And by that time, it was like 4:30, and there was no way I was going to get home in time to come here into the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion and actually get a program done. So that's why yesterday was not hooky. Yesterday was unmitigated, no two ways about it, pure exhaustion. I mean, really, 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 no kidding. Just worn the heck out. So that having been said, like I said, let's get to the gratitude part of the program. Let's see here. Thanks going out to our subscribers on the 12th and the 11th day of the month. We're reaching the not so many subscribers part of the month. But thanks go out to those of you who do. Thanks to Gary in New York, and thanks to Paul, and thanks as well to Ralphs. Thank you so very kindly to Paul from Parts Unknown, and to Christopher in Oregon, and thank you to Tony and Chico and John. So that's fantastic. We appreciate every subscriber, Patreon and PayPal, who does help keep this going. Lord, I just got, and just in case, oh my God, the fundraising goal is somewhere around $2,000. We'll just, let's call it 1,700. because, of course, I wasn't here yesterday. And the days I'm not here, we don't increase the fundraising goal, even though the bills don't change. So let's just call it $1,700 and see if we can please knock some of it down. Because, well, again, this is what happens when we don't fulfill the previous month's fundraising goal on time, and I do. I constantly worry. But I figure some of you would like to know about Tuesday. Tuesday was the primary, and I did not win, and that's okay. As far as, you know, as far as losing goes, this is about the best loss I have ever dealt with. Not because, I don't have to worry about campaigning anymore. I didn't get into this to lose. But considering that I had next to no budget whatsoever, zero advertising, and I managed to get the votes I got solely by talking to people and by goodwill of having lived here for a couple of decades and people knowing me both in my prior form and in my present identity now, it was really genuinely inspiring and heartwarming to have gotten fully one-third of the vote. I mean, that blew my mind. And so I'm humbled and honored with the number of people who were willing to trust me with their representation. And I campaigned on a platform of decency and acceptance and kindness and being a better West Virginia. And I think we can still have that. I communicated immediately to my primary opponent to tell him he had my complete and total support in the general election, and that we simply must rid ourselves of Tom Fast, because he is a monster, and the way he represents our county makes monsters of us all. So I do not see, and thanks to all of you who reached out to see how it went. And I will, I'm going to have a detailed post about this at some point in time, you know, like after after I catch up with myself. And I think I've probably still got a sleep deficit of God only knows how many hours. Maybe over the weekend. I don't know. But like I said, it was as inspiring a loss as one girl can have. And the bottom line is I did not see it as an end to something, but rather I see it as a beginning. And I think, I feel quite confident, in fact, that I will be back in 2024. God willing, and the crick don't rise. So that's the way I'm viewing it. And a lot of people have said they want me to come back and run for something in 2024. Although West Virginia politics can it can be damned interesting from time to time. You know, we lost because this state, and you got to expect it of a state like this, where we think so little of ourselves that we destroy the natural beauty that we have here in order to, you know, ship it to, I don't know, China, on putting the internal guts of our mountains on a slow boat to China, where they will burn it to make either to make steel or even to just make steam. That really is the earmark of a state that doesn't think much of itself. But nonetheless, we have lost a lot of population in this state, sufficient in the 2020 census for us to lose one of our three congressional seats, or our three seats in the House. We still have our two senators. Not that they're worth much or do any good. You can say that, in fact, they do harm. both Shelley Moore Capito and Joe to the Mansion Bourne actively harming about half of the population of the United States of America in the last day or so. But no, the more interesting aspect of all this on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I'm sure Joe to the Mansion Bourne is feeling a little thorn in the side himself, because while I did not win my primary contest, the biggest loser in West Virginia this past Tuesday was, in fact, Joe to the Mansion Bourne. Because, like I said, we lost a congressional seat, and that meant that there had to be a primary contest between the two incumbent members of Congress, namely two out of the three, I should say, and that would be David McKinley and Looney Mooney. I can't even think of Mooney's first name. I just think of Looney Mooney. He's the carpetbagger from Maryland who at one point in time was actually chair of the Maryland Republican Party and had been a candidate for that state Senate. And even and Maryland so despised him that he said, you know what, I'm going to cross the Potomac River and I'm going to be me a West Virginian. And so even though he's not a West Virginian, he is for the last couple of terms represented one of our three districts here. And he had to square up against David McKinley. And personally, I don't know about you, but I love it when Republicans beat the snot out of each other. And so Looney Mooney ran all these ads calling David McKinley a goddamn liberal. I mean, that's not a quote, but he votes with Joe Biden. He might as well be a Democrat. And, of course, Nitwit Nero got involved, and he, in turn, endorsed Looney Mooney. So that, in turn, led... One of these days, I got to have a long talk with Joe to the Mansion Bourne and explain what being a Democrat means. It means supporting Democrats. But, no, not Joe to the Mansion Bourne. Joe decided to go all in. Gave his full-throated endorsement to David McKinley, talking about how important David was, a better representative, yada, yada, yada. And then David McKinley lost his ass by double digits to Looney Mooney. So goodbye, Dave. Goodbye. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. See ya. Because even if he was once, you know, even if he was like the blind hog who occasionally finds an acorn, in the long run, he was still just another goddamn Republican who will screw over women, screw over working people, screw over kids, screw over everybody who isn't David McKinley or, he's even willing to screw over other Republicans, working Republican families, you know, the ones that the elitist types that, you know, those people vote against their own interests, their own best interests. We don't understand them. Why do they vote against their own best interests? Yeah. So he lost, and Nitwit Nero and Mooney won, but Joe Manchin lost big because, you know, Joe Manchin... The Democratic Party is little more than a cult of personality for Joe Manchin. It's hard for Democrats to survive. When the only reason the Democratic Party in West Virginia exists is as a life support system for Joe Manchin. And so, you know, he's supposed to be this powerful, powerful force, but he got his ass handed to him. Because that was as much a vote against Joe Manchin as it was a vote against David McKinley. And given what he did in the Senate yesterday, well, I guess there's a handful of self-hating women who will vote for Joe Joe to the mansion born in 24. But I can't imagine there are a lot. No, because of course, Joe to the mansion born joined with every other Republican, and he was the lone Democrat who voted to screw over every person in this country capable of becoming pregnant. So, I mean, he said previously that he plans to run in 2024. But it may not be quite what he expected. And so when the vote came up to codify reproductive rights, Joe Manchin, who has never had to worry about becoming pregnant, Joe Manchin, who has never had to worry about getting rutted on by Uncle Daddy, Joe Manchin, who has never worried about bleeding to death inside of his own abdomen from an ectopic pregnancy, Joe Manchin, who back in the day never used to miss a goddamn West Virginians for Life bean dinner, he said, to hell with women. To hell with them in West Virginia, and to hell with them in every other state in the Union. But he said, I support a federal right to abortion, but the Women's Health Protection Act goes too far. It's just disappointing we're going to be voting on a piece of legislation which I would not vote for today, but I would vote for Roe v. Wade codification if it was today. He said, I've been pro-life all my life. But this bill expands abortion. We should not be dividing this country further. We're already divided. Oh, Joe, oh, how sweet. He's a uniter, not a divider. So he was just being consistent because he voted against it back in February, too. I'm not going to forget. And I hope thousands and thousands of West Virginians will remember as well. God, he's disgusting. I'd vote for a more conservative bill. We can't expand abortion. It doesn't expand abortion. And I just love hearing a conservative Catholic man talk about how pro-life he is. It just tickles me pink. So he will be primaried. I hope he is primaried by somebody who is actually a viable candidate. I don't know, because primarying him with someone who doesn't have a chance of winning if they get the nomination, well, that's a loser. I don't know. Hey, maybe David McKinley will run for the Republican nomination in 2024. Who knows? Matt in San Francisco with a note. We have a saying, one-third of the vote first time out. You go, girl. Tits up and power on. I didn't say it was politically correct. Oh, thank you, Matt. Thank you. I kind of felt like that, too. I kind of was. Thank you, Darlene in Connecticut said, wow, Robin, you were playing soccer mom yesterday, shuttling everybody around. Everything but the minivan. Thank you, Darlene. Scott in San Diego, question about Joe. Does Joe to the mansion born's mansion have a cement pond, or is all cement inside his head? I'd say it's all inside his head, because actually Joe's mansion, Joe to the mansion born's mansion, is actually a floating mansion that bobs along in the, I don't know, the Potomac or the Anacostia River in D.C. What's it called? The SS Blown Up Mountain or something like that? I don't know. Oh, maybe it's the Almost Heaven. Or, I don't know, Mountains Blown to Kingdom Come. Did you know there's a state park in eastern Kentucky called Kingdom Come State Park? And it's named after a book by early 20th century author John Fox Jr., who wrote a book called The Little Shepherd of Kingdom Come. It's a beautiful park. If you're ever around, some beautiful views there. It's even gorgeous in the winter when it's covered in snow. You know, Joe to the mansion born was never going to vote for this bill. Ever. And if it said that abortion would be illegal federally except to save the life of the mother or in cases of rape or incest or ectopic pregnancy, well, that's the life of the mother. I probably would have voted against that, too, and said we were expanding abortion because, you know, he lies. And after watching what went down on Tuesday, when his political power was for, this is a complicated political science term, for shit in saving the hide of David McKinley over an endorsement from COVID Caligula. Yeah, a million deaths. I guess we're almost there or right there. But the fact that he couldn't deliver. He's got no small amount to worry about. And of course, he took cover, as he often does, Joe Manchin, behind the skirts of Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, who also support abortion rights, but not abortion rights like these. So now it's pretty much all over but the screaming and the dying as we wait for whenever it is the Supreme Court decides to announce their decision and get the hell out of town. And oh my God, the hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching over people expressing their First Amendment right to petition the government for redress of grievances. It's ridiculous. From CBS News, governors urge Department of Justice to end protests outside justices' homes. Oh, the poor babies. Are they having consequences? Oh, is the handmaid having a sad? And, of course, it's no surprise that the two governors leading this charge against the First Amendment are Glenn Youngkin of the Commonwealth of Virginia-stan. Old Dominion. You know, the guy who was swept into office on a tsunami of money from right-wing religion hate groups. He and the Republican governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, sent the letter to Attorney General Merrick Garland. It's a real anti-American laugh riot. This letter. Dear Attorney General Garland, as a result of the recent Dobbs... I'm sorry, that's a little too redneck, isn't it? As a result of the recent Dobbs vs. Jackson draft opinion press leak from the U.S. Supreme Court... Oh, it's a press leak. Isn't that charming? That's just adorable. It wasn't a press leak. A leak... The calls are coming from inside the house, y'all. It was leaked by a Republican, by a goddamn conservative. I have no doubt of it. As a result of the press leak from the U.S. Supreme Court, hundreds of demonstrators have recently chosen to picket Supreme Court justices at their homes in Virginia and Maryland. While protesting a final opinion from the Supreme Court is commonplace when done on the steps of the court or in the public square, the circumstances of the current picketing at the justices' private homes in residential neighborhoods are markedly different. Funny. I've read this First Amendment two or three times at least in my life. And I can't find in there where it says the right of that the people shall have the right of to petition for redress of grievances either on the steps of the Supreme Court or in the public square. I don't know. Maybe we need to go to the Boston Common to do this. You know, anywhere that these godforsaken black-robed monstrosities, these jurisprudential vandals and thugs aren't. I had a kind of, I kind of got triggered when I read that. You know why? Because I can remember one of our earlier dalliances with fascism, namely, and to wit, the presidency of George W. Bush, otherwise known by Mike Malloy as Raisin Brain, when that illegitimate attempt at a president would go somewhere and thousands of people would want to let him know that they thought he well and truly sucked, in addition to being a war criminal who caused the death of north of a million innocent Iraqi and Afghan civilians, women and children included. Yeah. Pregnant women included. But George didn't want to hear anything like that, no. Heavens to Murgatroyd, no. And so the White House insisted on putting, in creating, do you remember this? I mean, I know it was a long time ago and everything. But they insisted on creating free speech zones, which would sometimes be like 2 miles from where Raisin Brain was. And this feels a lot like that. Well, you little ladies, you just have your protest, but you go protest somewhere else. Because, you know, the justices of the Supreme Court, they have a right to pretend like their actions don't have no goddamn consequences now, don't you know? The stupid letter continues, the United States Federal Code, 18 U.S. Code, Section 1507, and I don't know why there's an apostrophe after 1507. I have a pretty good memory of my legal writing class, and I don't recall the citation style being including apostrophes that aren't behaving like apostrophes. States, whoever, with the intent of interfering with, obstructing, or impeding the administration of justice, or with the intent of influencing any judge, juror, witness, or court officer, and they said they found their bold button for intent of influencing any judge in the discharge of his duty, and they found the bold button against it, pickets or parades, close bold, in or near a building, housing a court of the new United States, or in or near a building or residence occupied or used by such judge, juror, witness, or court officer with such intent, uses any sound truck or similar device, or results to any other demonstration in or near any such building or residence, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. So women, people who can become pregnant, who are aggrieved at this decision, and the people who love and care about them, well, the governor of Maryland wants, and the governor of Virginia want you to know that they do not approve. In short, federal law prohibits picketing the home of a judge with the aim to influence the judge's decision-making process. I don't think anybody protesting has any notion that they're influencing the so-called decision-making process of a gang of right-wing jurisprudential thugs and vandals whose mind has been made up and about a woman's right to choose, and whose mind was made up when they lied to the Congress. Curiously, there's not a paragraph in here about the crime of lying to Congress under oath. No, the protesters aren't trying to change people's aren't trying to change these thugs' minds. Their only purpose is to let them know how disgusted we are. Given that the document in question is a draft opinion that was released in order to harden the five supporting votes for this, well, four, depending on which justice had it released, to harden their opinions and make sure that they don't get all squishy and run over and giant an opinion by old Balls and Strikes John Roberts. It seems clear this federal code is applicable. No, it is not clear. Because you have to establish the intent. We are also deeply concerned by the possibility that women may die. No, that's not in there. These two nasty ass conservative white men. No, they're not. We're also deeply concerned by reports of demonstrators using threatening language such as these comments to ABC News. Alito's intrusion into our rights deserves some intrusion into his peace and comfort. Wow. That's threatening language. What delicate little flowers Glenn Youngkin and Larry Hogan are. Shit, never mind. And if you take away our choices, we will riot. Well, I mean, there is that old saying out there. A riot is the language of the unheard. And when at least three justices are willing to lie under oath and make clear by signing on to a draft opinion that says women have no rights to control the reproductive workings of their bodies, well, that's a pretty good definition of being unheard, don't you think? Little snowflakes continue. It is in your hands to ensure that applicable federal law is enforced to preserve the integrity of our American judicial system and the safety of our citizens who aren't women. Five of them in particular. They're delicate. Here's a fun question. If something, and this is purely speculative, this is just a thought experiment, if something were to happen to Brett Kavanaugh's house, who do you reckon the beneficiary is on the homeowner's policy? Is it Brett Kavanaugh and his handmaid wife? Or do you reckon it might be the person who paid off the mortgage on the down low? Last week, our respective state law enforcement leaders engaged with federal and local counterparts to provide threat analysis and assessment updates, draft operational security plans, and ensure consistent lines of communication. While we are willing to assist in the event the need for increased security measures becomes imminent, federal law enforcement entities must take the lead and provide sustained resources to protect the justices and ensure these residential areas are secure in the weeks and months ahead. When did they become so darling? You know, the early 19th century was a decidedly much more dangerous time. I mean, you could get your ass called out into a duel, as Stephen Decatur did, for simply suggesting that one of your brother officers in the new United States Navy was something less than honorable in the conduct of his duties. And Stephen Decatur got all dead as a result of it when he got called out to that duel. And then there's Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. There's Alexander Hamilton's kid. And yet somehow or another, the Supreme Court justices of the day managed to go about their daily business without some quivering governor of Virginia getting all dewy and the vapors over his safety. Today, we together ask that the Department of Justice, through the respective new United States Attorney's offices, provide appropriate resources to safeguard the justices and enforce the law as it is written. Problem is, if you enforce the law as it's written, nothing gets done. It is critical that our department acts to preserve the safety and standards of the highest court in the land. There's simply too much. It's the hilarity of that final line. There's simply too much at stake. Yeah, maybe that's the same thing the people who are in the streets are thinking. Governor Glenn, you and your obsession with who goes potty where. And Larry Hogan, who I'm sure has been pressured because that house that Bratton is handmade and is Spawn live in. It's in Maryland. Yes, of course it is. These people. I mean, the amount of hand wringing here would be hilarious were it not so absolutely tone deaf to the needs of literally tens of millions of women in this country. Of course, I give credit to President Biden for being able to read the handwriting on the wall. He has said that if the court comes out with a decision as it appears it will, that it will extend, it will well beyond any right to an abortion, and will also open up decisions on same-sex marriage and access to contraception, in addition to, just about anything else. We do hereby hold today, and I think it would be hilarious if, Justice Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas was to write this particular opinion. We do hereby hold today that this court's opinion in Loving versus Virginia is hereinafter and shall be forevermore null and void, and there shall be no more miscegenation. And he could go ahead and say, and while we're at it, we're going to overrule and overturn the decision in Brown versus Board of Education, because after all, the schools are already more segregated than they were in 1948. So we don't even need that anymore. Oh, hell, let's go ahead and get rid of the 13th Amendment while we're at it. Yeah. So, there we go. Scott in San Diego says, draft opinion. While he concurs with Alito's draft, Brett Kavanaugh wasn't allowed anywhere near it for fear he'd drink it. I like beer. Oh, Scott. That was cowbell worth his draft because he'd drink it. That's good stuff there. Oh, thank you, Billable Rick. Billable Rick says, great job on your campaign. You ran an excellent maiden campaign for public office with a shoestring budget, needing to get behind the mic most every day and having only about 45 days to campaign. You managed to get 402 votes, only 404 shy of the total of your primary campaign opponent. Let's hope that the Democratic nominee, Mr. Pena, can defeat the loathsome Tom Fast in November. From your mouth to God's ears, Rick. You and Mr. Pena received two more votes than the combined votes of the two maggot party candidates, 1207 to 1205. And Fast had a close race, 57.9 to 42.2 in his primary race. Thus, Fast appears to be vulnerable in November. Will Mr. Pena welcome appearances by you on his behalf on the campaign trail this fall? If he asks, I will. I will not, however, I'm not going to presume to do anything that he does not ask me to do. But I told him Tuesday evening he has my full and unconditional support. And I will make that clear, because that was my purpose in running, is to cleanse this district and this county of the monstrosity that is Tom Fast. But I don't think we want to rest on any laurels here, because a primary is not necessarily a good barometer of how a general election will go. And by the time November the 8th gets here, Tom Fast will have enough money to burn a sopping wet herd of sopping wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. And it'll all come from the religion industry and the people who are worried about the precious little fetuses, and, you know, obsessed with who goes potty where. But anyway, the President Biden did say, you're going to see these decisions up for grabs and further split the United States. He said that last night. We're going to be arguing about things we shouldn't have to argue about. And then, and bear in mind, the story I'm going off of is from CBS News, and further proof that copy editing really is dead, because this sentence, the leak of the draft was unprecedented from an institution that, unlike most in Washington, closely guards its secrets. Well, it's not unprecedented. It has happened before. Roe v. Wade itself was leaked. And so, too, was information about the Affordable Care Act leaked days before this actual draft opinion was leaked. Somebody was, some Republican, some conservative was leaking like a damn sieve to the Wall Street Journal. So that portion of this CBS News story is just plain false. And today, those five black-robed maniacs, darlings of the Federalist Society, jurisprudential vandals, Goths, Visigoths, and Gauls, or whatever. Well, they met for the first time, and I'll bet that was a hell of a lunch, won't you? Don't you? Oh, well. I mean, it's just life or death. It would be terrible, I tell you, terrible. If the justices were in any wise discomfited. And remember when the snowflake Republican governors say that, you know, people protest on the steps of the Supreme Court. No, they don't. I think, and I could be wrong, but I think the free speech buffer zone that the Supreme Court enjoys is something on the order of 60 feet. Maybe more. Because I know that if you're protesting there, the local constabulary gets a mite uppity if you start getting up toward, you know, the actual entrance to the court. Yeah. Here we are. Yeah. So I've just had some communication from let's put it this way. The shitty emails that I get mostly just go into a little cesspit we maintain for them, but I wanted to share something with you. And the little dirtbag who sends these things, and they're all from the same little dirtbag dude. the shitbird who sends this stuff, he craves attention. God, he's so hungry for it, it's pathetic. Sometimes it's just an all-evening flurry of poison and hate. But lest you think that I'm just sort of swanning through life, I got one last week suggesting that suicide would be an option for me. This is, of course, bullshit because, well, I'm happy. It would have been an option before transition. But now, no way, I don't want to miss a minute of this. Hell, I'll keep on being alive just despite this little shitbird. But there's a lot of filthy language in this. So I'm sort of trying to give you time if this is a content warning, trigger warning, to turn away. But I want you to know what I do put up with. Again, this is just one little disaffected, two-legged turd of a human being. And, well, this rolled in at 5:36 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Talk about abortion, you cunt. Every single Democrat's voted to give Ukraine $40 billion when Americans are going broke. No baby formula for American babies. After the vote, the Dems like Pelosi and McConnell all went, haw, 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 but Robin has new tits. Haw, 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 but Robin has a new snatch. Haw, 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 haw. Fuck you, Robin. I'd like to slam your head through a wall. You are welcome to fucking try. But you're not even real. This is performative. And then, abortionists and faggots need to move to Democrat states and leave the rest of the nation alone, or they will show all of you what real violence is. Poor little coward. Probably closeted, too. Anybody writes like that, reminds me of the Republicans who are forever getting caught with a man in their mouth. But he's so happy now because he got some attention. Yeah, I don't know if maybe his daddy sexually abused him or something. These people are like that. But it just, wanted you to have a sense of just how filthy and vile people can be. And you want to know the funniest part? This shit human probably considers himself to be liberal or progressive. And hides behind this every single Democrat's business. You can see the kind of And this steaming puddle of vomit has been going on and on and on about $40 billion for Ukraine when Americans are going broke. Why do you think Americans are going broke? Hint. It ain't because there's $40 billion going to Ukraine. Yeah, I know. Ugh. Pathetic. Oh, and by the way, I don't generally go in for celebrity stuff, but I think this probably, it must have been painful for them to admit, shortly before the country, the Hall of Fame Awards happened when, Naomi Judd was to be inducted. She killed herself. And appearing on ABC, Ashley Judd said on Good Morning America, speaking with Diane Sawyer, mother used a firearm. That's the piece of information that we are very uncomfortable sharing, but understand that we're in a position that if we don't say it, someone else is going to. Initially, the sisters, Winona and Ashley, said our mother died of mental illness. And that was a pretty good tip-off that it was suicide. Ashley Judd continued, she obviously was suffering, and as such, her days up until that moment were hurtful to her. There are some things that we would just like to retain as a family. Both sister and pop have sort of deputized me in certain ways to speak on behalf of the family at this early time before things about the 30th of April become public without our control. And the fact of the matter is, somebody would leak it. And I guess I don't know that it hasn't, but it's a miracle that, you know, something like TMZ hasn't already leaked the photos. One of the things that haunts my own memory and creates a certain amount of empathy and sympathy in me for what they're going through is the photo I was never supposed to see back in 1971, when I was 8. And my parents, and there's no sitter for me, had to take me with them when they went to Atlanta to identify the body of I thought he was my brother. Turns out I don't think there was any blood relation at all. And I just happened to see a Polaroid photo of, and I can see, if I could paint, I could paint it. I would never paint it, though. But the pristine white sheets of the gurney and his head lolled over to one side, and those pristine white sheets painted red in his blood with his brains coming out the side. So, yeah, I thought about that when I saw this story. And my heart goes out to them because it never goes away. And, of course, it's a reminder that when there are firearms in the home, the likelihood of someone in the home dying by firearms violence, suicide is an act of violence, goes up dramatically. Of course, that gives the folks at the National Ruble Association a real sad when you mention that, but it is, well, gosh darn it, it's a fact. Yeah. Yeah, my heart breaks for that family. And I want, Kentucky folk, not that far different from West Virginia folk. And we sure do love our goons, even when it kills the people we love. On speaking of threats, and since we were talking about how terribly, terribly upset those five jurisprudential thugs are, well, Jen Psaki is on the way out of her job. She's done a fantastic job. If the only thing she did was embarrass Peter Ducey every day, she would have done a lifetime's work. But she's done so much more. When you think of her in comparison and contrast with, say, what's her name? Huckstrebe's daughter. Or Kellyanne Conjob. Who's the furry, the first one there? under Nitwit Nero, the guy who argued over at his boss's bidding over the size of the inaugural crowd. I hate it when, well, never mind. Thursday, at a breakfast meeting that was hosted by the Christian Science Monitor this morning, Jen Psaki was talking to reporters. And, of course, nobody's out in the streets in front of Sammy Bad Breath's house or Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas's house or The Handmaid's house or Brat's house and or Ann's boy Neil's house or even old Balls and Strikes's house, threatening them with violence. But, well, maggots aren't that way. Because Jen Psaki noted, I've had threats. I've had nasty letters. Texts to me with my personal address. The names of my children. It crosses lines, and you know, that's when it becomes a little scary. And then using some truly, truly wishy-washy, both-siderist language, the USA Today then says, public officials across the country have reported an increasing number of threats over the past couple of years, with targets ranging from members of Congress and governors to even school board members and health care workers. Some experts worry the threats could even jeopardize the running of this year's midterm elections. Well, the way that's written, this is one of our little journalism moments, the way that's written, it makes it sound like there's a pretty evenly divided group of people being threatened. Nothing could be further from the truth. The members of Congress being threatened are, by a wide majority, Democrats. The governors being threatened are, by a wide majority, Democrats. Even school board members are, by a wide majority, Democrats, or even just not maggots. Because they have been told to do it. They're told to do it every time they tune into Tucky O. Rose's program. They're told to do it every time they hear of another pathetic little scrawl from their orange god emperor. They're told to do it across the AM radio band in right-wing hate radio. They're told to do it every time they tune into Frau Ingram or the Hannity job. They're told to do it. And healthcare workers. Healthcare workers make the list, too. Here, as the White House today noted, noted that we have almost reached 1 million dead Americans. Yeah. Healthcare workers. Huh. The way this thing's written, you'd think that the damn liberals. Sean Spicer. Thank you, Scott. Spicy. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Lee. How did I forget Spicy the furry? But you'd think that it was a bunch of healthcare workers, a bunch of Democrats. God damn it! You can't make me wear a mask. You can't make me take no vaccine and get the liquid barcodes and 5G receptors of Bill Gates in my blood. It wasn't, of course. Maggots. Just like it wasn't Black Lives Matter in Orange Face or Antifa in orange face attacking and MAGA hats attacking the Capitol on January 6th. Honest to God, if you had a job editing at USA Today, I mean, what was he doing when this copy came across his desk from Michael Collins? I mean, they could have even embedded a link to analyses from federal law enforcement. Showing that the vast amount of domestic terrorism in this country is coming from the fascist right wing, the Christian right wing, the evangelical right wing, the maggot right wing, the very fine people of the Nazis of the right wing, people of the same mindset who do things like bomb reproductive health clinics and murder, assassinate doctors as they stand in their churches. Well, Jen Psaki did go on to say that there have been times she's alerted the Secret Service. She said the safety of her two children, ages 4 and 6, is a real concern for her. Necessarily, after she spoke out, The maggots in Arlington, the Arlington branch of the GQP, said, well, we have not publicly disseminated any Biden administration official's home address. That adverb's doing a lot of work there, isn't it? Publicly disseminated. No, they just send it out to their little white supremacist listservs, I guess. Unlike the hordes of progressive activists online who have disseminated the addresses of justices of the Supreme Court, nor are we disseminating Ms. Psaki's home address among our membership. Oh, that dependent prepositional phrase is doing some hard work among our membership. Yeah, don't send it out to the general membership. Just get it out on the listserv, okay? But Jen Psaki's a grown-up. And she said, people can dislike me. That's okay. But when it, outright threats, well, that should be alarming to people. It's a sign of the venom that we see out there in society. And of course, you know, she didn't go on to say where the venom's coming from or how it's metastasizing. I guess we are left, I mean, and those of us on the left, the so-called left, ha, what left? We can figure out for ourselves where it's coming from. I just gave a list. Frau Engram, Tuckio Rose, the testicle roaster, Toasty Testicles the Tucky. Yeah, even I couldn't say it that well. Yeah, I agree. Randy Radar says Ms. Psaki will be sorely missed. Yeah, but she's being replaced by an equally brilliant woman, Corinne Jean-Pierre. She's being promoted from the principal deputy press secretary to the top job. She is a trailblazer, a pathmaker, because she is the first black woman to be White House press secretary. And she's also the first openly LGBTQ person in that position. Yeah. Good for her. And good for Joe Biden. He's getting so much right. And what does the shitbird right say? Well, he's losing his mind. He's got dementia. It's almost like they weren't here for the 4 years between 2017 and 2021. Oh, yeah, Matt in San Francisco is right. Don't forget K-Li Maganini. How could we? God knows, I've tried. As I'm sure many of us have. Let me see here. Going back to the little shitbird and his attempts at typing, I had a note from Lee in New York. Ukraine money or baby food? This argument makes no sense. Apparently, Republicans believe that money was diverted from baby formula to Ukraine weapons. Does Northrop Grumman make baby food? Does Gerber make anti-tank missiles? Maybe baby formula is only purchased by the government before the baby gets it. Apparently, Republicans believe that there's plenty of baby formula if only there was a rapid delivery service of purchases. Oh, the baby formula thing. You know, you'd think these little morons, actually believe that there's some, I don't know, national strategic baby formula reserve. The government's out there hoarding the baby formula. Don't be surprised when you hear that some, or when the clip pops up on this program at some point. It's probably part of the great replacement theory that it turns out has been mentioned on more than 400 occasions on Tucky O. Rose's testicle toasting program. Oh, thank you. Irish Dave with a note. And I have a lot of respect for Will Bunch at the Philadelphia Inquirer. I was pleased to actually get to meet him. What, back in 2019? He just happened to be in the same Starbucks where Chris and I were getting a refreshing beverage. Got a chance to talk to him. But Will Bunch in his newsletter writes, the likely overturn of Roe versus Wade by the Supreme Court, it's behind a paywall, so I can't see all of it. There's a lot of people asking how America got to this point on abortion rights and where do we go next? A new video from the team at Now This News, narrated by the actor and activist Alyssa Milano, is a quick overview of the patriarchy's long war on women's choice. It also points to a possible solution, the revival of the Equal Rights Amendment, which would be darn fine if we could get it. So I think I'm going to try going to Now This News and see if I can watch that at some point. So, wow, I have filibustered the hour away. And, yeah, we've still got $1,700 to raise. It would be nice if we could take a bite out of that. Do they still do this? Scott in San Diego asks, when it first launched around 1981 or 82, USA Today was derisively called McPaper, comparing it with the well-known Burger House of Ronald McD. The point was a comparison of it offering about as much informational value as the Golden Arches did with nutritional value. I remember their commercials, famous folks singing, I read it every day. Well, hell, folks, if it takes you a full day for you to read USA Today, a remedial reading and comprehension course might be in order. P.S. wrote and proofread this email without moving my lips. Go me! Yay, you! And, of course, one of the funniest things that I think that the Harvard Lampoon ever put out, you know, they do like one a year, was the year that they put out their parody of USA Today. You know how the banner always says, you know, via satellite. Ooh, terribly impressive. I don't know, is that still on the header there? Via satellite? Well, the Harvard Lampoon version said via big truck. And I, for some reason or another, I particularly remember the TV listings. Omission Impossible. So this would have been like in the 80s. Omission Impossible, A-M-I-S-H-I-O-N, Impossible, Omission Impossible. And the blurb for that week's episode is, Hiram and Lemuel miss another adventure when they refuse to answer the demon telephone. Yeah, it's beautiful. Hey, thank you, Christopher. Thank you so much. That's so very kind of you. Christopher said, baby formula. Thanks. That's good. And all kidding aside, we're going to be buying that again soon. Could be any day now. So excited. Baby formula. That's good. Well, let's run over, because when I did the brief program on Tuesday, well, I didn't have time for much in the way of calls, so let's see who we got on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Dave and the Blind Part Deux.
Part Deux. The adventure continues.
Exactly. Robin, first off, I have orders from higher headquarters to congratulate you on your campaign.
Well, thank you.
And the 35.1% of the vote you got.
It was pretty inspiring.
Wow. I told Christine, I said, she's got nothing to be ashamed of. She says, hell, with as little as she started out with, I'm surprised she got that much. But she wanted me to let you know that both of us are very proud of you.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thank you to Christine.
Now for the less or the funnier part of the program, our favorite Maine senator, Susan.
Susan Collins.
Well, yeah, evidently she's afraid of chalk.
Oh, I know. Thank you for reminding me.
And here's the beauty of it. Here's the beauty of it. In her neighborhood are other famous people from Maine, including Stephen King, who took a picture of this artwork and retweeted it out to all of his followers. So because Susan had to make an issue of this, instead of it going away quietly where only a few people, maybe a paper in Maine would know, you know, now the whole world knows that she's afraid of artwork.
kind of makes you wonder what finger paint does to her.
Do they allow Republican senators to use finger paint? I mean, they do tend to make a mess on their own anyway. Are you sure they allow them? Because when I was a kid in nursery school, you had to have the smock on and the whole thing on because, well, it wouldn't all get on the paper, of course. So I'm beginning to wonder. If we should allow our Republican senators to have access to such dangerous art supplies. Evidently Stephen King tweeted this out to all of his followers, and now news agencies from around the world have picked it up, and oh my God. This is one of those times when the phrase shut the fuck up might actually be a good bit of political advice. But I'm saving my particular ire for the senior senator from Manitoba.
Can't blame
that,
you.
That defensive weapon, cruise missile himself, who just blathers on and on and on and says absolutely nothing. I mean, this was a guy who kissed the ass of a man who insulted his wife. If I'd been running against Donald Trump and he'd said something like that about Christine, I'd have gone down his throat and brought his tonsils up. But evidently they breed him a little shyer in Canada. So, and I never quite understood the rationale for his being able to run for president anyway. Yes, his mother was an American. His father was not. He was born in Canada.
Right.
He can run for the Senate. He's an American citizen. But not being it's not like he was born on a military base in Canada under the jurisdiction of the United States.
That was allegedly the case with John McCain. However, the hospital John McCain was born in Panama was not inside the Canal Zone, nor was it on a U.S. military base.
Yeah, I think it was in Panama City or something, if I recall correctly. The hospital that he was born at was actually in Panama City, which makes sense. But and then you've got Mitt Romney's daddy, who was born in Mexico. But I guess it's okay if you're a Republican. I don't know of a Democrat that's done that. I very easily could be wrong. There have been thousands of people that have run for president. I'm very careful about how I say things, even jokingly, because if I were to say I am running for blank, then the state and federal election commissions could look over at me and go, yeah, but you haven't filed your paperwork, you know, or you need to show us, in the case of the federal, that you spent $5,000 on your campaign and things like that. The little minutia that the Republicans poo-poo. But it's there for a reason. And by the way, in Indiana, in Marion County, the county I live in, mm-hmm. They could have elected several years back, they could have legitimately elected Donald Duck for public office because there was a man whose name was Reverend Donald Duck.
Oh, please tell me he ran.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he did, but I actually knew the gentleman because he ran a homeless shelter I was in for a while. And he was as crooked as a dog's hind leg. So he may very well have run for office. But, yeah, his opponent would immediately try to say, well, no, he's not legitimate because Donald Duck's a fictional character. Well, not in this case. In this case, Donald Duck is an actual human being. So I'm waiting for some bright, young, progressive whose name happens to be Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse or something along that line.
I'm waiting for Jesus Henry Christ. You know, Jesus H. Christ.
Yes, I understand Jesus H. Christ. But then you can hear the debates from the Republican side of it. Well, Jesus told me over my cornflakes, and then Mr.
Yeah,
Christ.
And I certainly did not.
I did not say that. I did not say that. However, it would also explain why there is such worship of Donald Trump. After all, his daddy's middle name was Christ.
Yep. Yep. It was. We're not kidding.
No, that is no joke, even though Fred Trump was a joke.
Yeah, wasn't the granddaddy Fred Froderick Christ Trump?
Frederick ended up marrying Christ was the maiden name, and I use the term loosely, of Fred Trump's mama, who was the madam of the house.
Okay. Yeah. You're right.
Let me
offer up. We handle our corrections as quickly as possible when they come in, and I have a correction for you, Dave. From Scott in San Diego. Medical correction for Dave and the Blind. Those aren't Trump's tonsils; they're Putin's balls. That was quality.
That's okay. I'll consider that maneuver a special military operation. In that case, so I don't get in trouble.
Wait. Life. Special military teabag operation.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just got a note from Brendan because I was talking about that parody of USA Today by a big truck.
Uh-huh.
And Dave reminds us, Brendan reminds us, the Lampoon previously parodied the New York Times circa 1978 or 1979, and it was hilarious, I must confess. In a tip of the hat to my gutter snipe upbringing, what a phrase that is. Yeah. How many radio programs are out there where you'll hear a phrase like, in a tip of the hat to my gutter snipe upbringing? That was magic, Brendan. I remember the TV listings page, 7 a.m., Captain Kangaroo. After 40 years, the captain wonders why he's not made colonel. And then my favorite listing, 7:30 a.m., Sesame Street. Big Bird shows Rita Moreno why he's called Big Bird. Oh, God.
But, you know, in 55 years now, Big Bird is only 5 years old.
Well, that's because, and you know, any Kurt Vonnegut fan Hoosier that he was, could explain that to you, Dave. It's because Big Bird is trapped in a chronosynclastic infundibulum.
All right, and at which point I look over at Kurt Vonnegut and scratch my head and just walk away.
Yeah, just like Winston, just like Winston Niles Rumford.
He was a brilliant man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm proud to say he was from my neck of the woods.
I know.
As a child, he was involved with the Children's Museum. His family was very well-to-do before
A family of architects and scientists. And Kurt Kurt Vonnegut often cited and said, "I guess I'm the most famous Hoosier since John Greenleaf Whittier, the Hoosier poet." But there have been some there have been some famous Hoosiers. I think of Thomas Riley Marshall. He was a bit of a smartass,
yeah.
And he's the man. He was the Vice President of the United States under Woodrow Wilson. And he's the man who said, what America needs is a good 5-cent cigar.
Yeah, amen. I'm with him on that one. Although nowadays it'd probably be more like a $12 cigar.
Oh, honey, you haven't priced cigars lately, have you?
No, I haven't. But I do know that the few Havanas I can get are outrageous.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, of course, you know, I think you can still get a box, you know, like a 5-pack of El Palutos for under $10. But,
yeah. Why? If I'm
well, precisely,
get that
and you know, that reminds me, I was having a conversation. I was having a conversation with Ferg earlier today, and we were talking about the baby on the way. And I said,
yes, when did she do? When is she set to arrive?
It could happen any day. And so bags are packed. And, you know, who knows? One of these evenings it may be. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll be back later. Got to hit the road.
Got to run baby on the way. Bam. Yeah, okay.
But we were I got to wondering, you know, because I jokingly said, well, you know, son, for you, I'll detransition for a couple of hours and we'll stand around outside the hospital smoking cigars. But then I realized it's illegal to stand around outside the hospital smoking cigars anymore. And said,
You can get bubblegum cigars.
Well, that was the point I was raising. I said, hey, we could get bubblegum cigars. And then I got to thinking, I bet you can't. I mean, I haven't been bubblegum cigar shopping in a while. This will send the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department into overdrive mode. But I wonder if it's even possible to get bubblegum cigars anymore because, you know, that encourages kids to smoke.
There's a place here in Indianapolis called Johnny Rockets. It's a candy shop. They do a lot of that old school candy.
Oh, there's another place like that in the Lower East Side in Manhattan, and they were closed when I was there a few years ago. I wanted to go through there and just gaze in slack jawed wonder at the candy of my bygone days.
This place is right on the circle, and they have unusual sodas. And one day I walked in there and I saw advertised cold. A chocolate bacon soda. So being the brave soul that I am and the chocolate lover and the bacon lover that I am, I had the clerk pull one out of the cooler and pop it open for me, and I tried it. I'm not regretting trying it, Robin, but I will not go downtown specifically for it.
you had one, and that's enough for a lifetime. You know, one of the things that I regret from my trip to Boston years and years ago is that, and it's either a love it or hate it kind of thing. I didn't get to try Moxie. Our dear friend Bob Lottie had a six pack for me, but I couldn't take it with me on the plane, and so it could be, you know, security threat. But I didn't get to try it. And so that's on my list. And people say, oh, I've told that to some people and they said, you don't know how lucky you are. You really dodged one that time, Robin. And other people say, oh, what a shame. It really is something different, which is a far cry from it really is something delicious.
You gotta love this place, Johnny Rockets is the name of the place. And, you gotta love this place because some of their sodas are weird flavor combinations and have weird names like Motion Poop. I wasn't brave enough to try that one. I figured I was going out on the ledge with the bacon and chocolate. But they have like the old Sugar Daddy taffies, you know, the great big ones. You can get the great big Toblerones.
Ooh.
Which I one time bought one of those giant Toblerones for Christine for her birthday. And she absolutely loves Toblerones.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever had it.
Toblerones?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it. I've just never.
It's chocolate and hazelnut, and I believe they're made in Germany.
Well, I mean, are the hazelnuts whole or?
No, they're chopped up in the chocolate.
Because I have had the Ferrero Rochers or Rochers. I don't know.
The thing is, your idiot correspondent that was bitching about the $40 billion to Ukraine, The White House only asked for $33 billion. It was the Republicans, along with the Democrats in the House, who said, no, we need to give them $7 billion more. So while this right-wing turd is yelling at you and threatening you and all of that, the truth of the matter is that it wasn't the goddamn liberals. It was a bipartisan increase that the White House did not ask for. Of course, Joe Biden will sign it, of course.
Yeah, sure.
And I can understand why they did that. That shit plays well back home.
Sure it does.
There are enough old right-wing assholes who remember when Russia was a dirty word. You know, you didn't have people like Tucky Tucky and all of those shitbirds going, I love Russia. No, because they would have been taken out and summarily shot behind the VFW. And that happened back in the 80s. You know. But, no, I think that if I had known even a couple of weeks ago that the baby was coming this close, I would have seen if I could have gotten a box of those bubblegum cigars. Because I know you don't smoke anymore.
Truth.
God, I wish I didn't, but I'm working on it, dear. It's one of those things.
You try know the, I'm telling you, try the pouches. What I found to be the biggest hurdle, Dave, was not so much the nicotine addiction, because the pouches took care of that, but it takes a few days to break the physical inclination to, well, I mean, in my case, I always kept a pack of cigarettes and a lighter in the console of the car, and I had a pack of cigarettes and a lighter back here, and when I would go out to the car, the first thing I did was start the car, reach, grab cigarette, grab lighter, light cigarette, roll down window. It took a couple of weeks.
I'm a pipe smoker, and pipe smokers are a little different than cigarette and cigar smokers.
Oh, a pipe is a magnificent hand prop. You can sit around and mess with a pipe for hours on end. There's the packing and the tamping and the scraping and the lighting and the relighting and the puffing.
Exactly, and it's a ritualistic thing. I guess it's my religious replacement. You know, I tamp it down and I light it and get the good cherry on it. And then when it smokes down, I just pack a little more on top and that kind of thing. But I found that I am constantly buying lighters. I'll lose one in the house. And instead of going out and searching for it, I will go out to the gas station and buy one of the little dollar lighters. I even got me a little mini blowtorch pipe lighter that people use to light bongs or hookahs with.
Or wax or so-called honey, or so-called oil, or so-called crack, or so-called meth.
No, Robin, I don't deal in those types.
I understand.
But I don't want Agent Fred going, hey, we got a live one here. Yeah, no, Agent Fred, you do not. But my landlord saw it. And he had some boxes to burn. He took it out in the burn pit and hit and whipped those boxes up. And he said, okay, thanks. Because he didn't have to mess with flipping it and all that. He just got it lit, and there it goes. But I am so happy for you, Robin. Things just seem to be clicking on all cylinders for you right now.
Well, you know, knock wood.
I hope it continues.
I do too, and I appreciate that. That's so very kind of you, Dave. I appreciate it.
I know Thanksgiving and Christmas are going to be special this year, just because the new baby and all that. That's going to be really cool. Anyway, I was sad to hear about, I had not heard about the situation with the judge. And I'm a survivor of a suicide attempt. For God's sake, if you see somebody in that much trouble, do something. Say something. Get somebody to intervene. Yeah, they might get pissed off at you, but you might save somebody's life. I survived because I mixed Tylenol with psych medications and curled it up. But I lied to Christine about how I was feeling. And it was the day after her birthday. I wasn't going to do it on her birthday. But by God, when she found out what happened, and she goes, you knew back when I asked you if you were all right, and you told me yes. You lied to me. Robin, let me tell you, that hurt. But she made me promise that if I ever got into that situation again, that I was to say something to her or to somebody. I was calling my therapist or somebody. And I know people here in the Horn know that I have struggled with depression over the years. And I know how much concern there is out there for me. Understand, in my case, when I get that bad off, I reach out to Christine. I talk to my therapist. I let the people who give a shit about me know what's going on. Not that they can necessarily do anything, but that there is somebody there watching. And my therapist and I have figured out my biggest problem right now is the isolation, because there's so much road work around my house that I could not get out of my house if I wanted to. Somebody would literally have to put me in a wheelchair and pop a wheel and wheel me a block and a half to get in the car.
That's terrifying, Dave.
Yeah, and it's going to happen for another year, and it's been going on for already a year already. So since last August.
I mean, is there a chance of that being remedied?
Not without raising unholy hell, but I'm used to raising a few demons in places. So I got one of those phone calls that want to help me with my tax problem. Problem is, other than when I was married to Christine, I've never had taxable income in my life. And I asked them, well, how did you get my name? Well, we got it from an internet source. I said, when was the internet source given to you guys? Well, I don't know. What is your physical address and the name of your company? They gave me the name of the company. They would not give me a mailing address so that I could check them out. So I called the Attorney General's office. This woman intimated that only the Federal Trade Commission could regulate them because they were in California. I got news for you people. If you're trying to defraud somebody in the state of Indiana or in any other state or territory in the United States, the Attorney General's office has this little lovely thing. They call it different names, but generally it's a consumer protection division. And so I call the consumer protection division and I'm having them send me out a form, but I got on the state's do not call list. And to tell you how powerful these Attorney General's office, consumer, protection divisions are, Christine was having a problem with an insurance company in Virginia. They said that because some of her payments had been late, that her gap insurance was no longer in force. Well, that wasn't in the contract. Christine even had her lawyers go over it. It wasn't in the contract. Christine sent in the relevant papers to the Attorney General. The Attorney General said, look, if you want to continue doing business in Indiana, because they were financing cars in Indiana, if you want to do business in Indiana, you'll refund Mrs. Shaw's premium. Because she lost the car due to a wreck. And they were still trying to dun her for payments. Well, that's what the gap insurance was for. It was to cover the difference between the cost of the car and what was still owed on it and the value of the car after it was wrecked. So Christine got a refund from them. She had to go around a couple of times with them on it. And evidently the Attorney General of Indiana got in touch with the Attorney General in Virginia and said, we're going to do this. You might want to put them on notice that they're not to do it. And within 48 hours, Christine had her check. So, yeah, I'm used to raising more than a little hell when necessary. But, yeah. So if these scammers end up calling you and saying, well, we got it from the internet. I mean, they had my name. They had my phone number. They probably had personally identifying information already, but they weren't willing to come up with the information that I asked for so that I could check them out and see if they were legitimate. This woman came back, well, how do I know I'm talking to you? Really? I said, well, if you're not talking to me and I give you information claiming to be me and I'm not me, then I'm breaking the law, and I guarantee you I'm not breaking the law. So I was a little irritated last night. But, yeah, that's what... But then I came up in an era when you had civics classes and you had things like basic business law classes in high school that taught you what a contract was, what a tort was, how the small claim system worked, you know, what the various courts did, in state and federal courts did, and what their jurisdictions were and how it affected business and what businesses needed to know and things like that. And that one semester helped me out because she's like, well, the Attorney General of Indiana can't do anything to us. And I'm like, oh, hell no, they can't. They can sure as fuck take you to federal court. Because you're crossing state lines to solicit your business. And they were using an Indiana phone number when they called me. They spiked a number from another area code in Indiana. I said, well, that's funny because the phone number I've got for your company on my phone is from Indiana. So you were posing as a company in Indiana until I specifically asked you where you were. And so don't think the Attorney General can't reach out and touch you. But that's everything from the blind. The split edition, because Tuesday and now Thursday, we'll split the difference and call it Permanent Wednesday. But I'll talk to you later, Robin.
All right, Dave, you have a good evening, and please give Christine our fondest regards and best wishes.
I will. And the best to you and to your family. And I can't wait to hear when the baby arrives.
So. It will be a happy day.
All right.
All right. You take care. Good to hear from you, Dave. Bye now.
Right, bye-bye.
And that's our buddy Dave in the Blind, who always brings so much to the conversation. Thanks to Ralphs and thanks to Lee in New York. And well, I now know that, yes, one can still get bubblegum cigars. That's worth thinking about. And they come in apple and, I guess, tutti frutti and banana. Randy Radar says, Moxie tastes like medicine-y root beer. I don't know if I want to. I mean, I'm okay with root beer. But, wait, what? Medicine-y? Something tells me maybe the people who told me I dodged one were in the right on that one. And I had a note earlier from Jude. She said, first time standing at the Supreme Court. My memory's locked in the visual of the first time the boots went to D.C. It was a cold January, not too long after the attempted assassination of Representative Gifford. With the boots over my left shoulder, approaching the court, encountered numerous police officers, each who, viewing me from a distance, would walk out toward my direction, one actually with a hand on his gun. When reaching the white steps of the Supreme Court, to the right was a group of young adults, mouths duct-taped with the word LIFE written in red. Followers of the Dominionist, Lou Engels. As I walked up those stairs, reaching that expansive precipice again in the distance, a police officer walks toward me. He waves a dismissive hand gesture as I place the boots down, adhering by moving back. After four separate spots, finally I was rendered on the cement ground just below the first step. This Saturday is a day of action, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Women's groups across the nation will collectively be present with voices focused on the woman's right to privacy. Boots to share ground in Seattle and Olympia. You know my thoughts, Robin, on this timing. And P.S., thank you for standing on your ground when following the inner guidance in seeking to shift the political arena. Good work. Thank you, Jude. Thank you. And she adds, just remember why the boots were to go that first time in January. It was in support of a protest bringing attention to Gitmo and the detainees. In the chilly wind, dozens of individuals stood in front of the White House in silence. I later journeyed with them to stand at the Justice Department. It was piercing, physically, emotionally, and ethically to one's core. I can well imagine it was. And to do that, there's no place hotter, I swear. I mean, I know, Death Valley. You know, things like that, the Mojave Desert, and the Sahara, but it feels like there is nowhere hotter on planet Earth than Washington, D.C. in August, and nowhere colder than Washington, D.C. in late January, early February. And I can attest to both. Let's see here. God, where does the time go? We're almost done with 2 hours of the program. We have $1,690 in fundraising to do, and in light of the fact that the broadcast week for the last week of May will be truncated as I prepare for the horn-in and the arrival of dear friends. That means that, well, we can't go into a hole like this and last. We can't. You know, as usual, there's no ads for Buy Gold Now or mattresses developed with foam by NASA and perfected by the Swedes or Bose Wave radios or various juices and potions and nutritional supplements, chocolate paleo chicken bone beverage or stupid beets. This needs to come down. It needs to come down sooner rather than later. And I want to go into the because that little shitbird somehow equated baby formula and Ukraine. Well, I've got some background, and I've had it for a couple of days on the baby formula thing. And once again, yeah. It's related to the goddamn pandemic. It's also related to bad cleanliness practices at an Abbott Labs plant in Michigan. And apparently, baby formula has taken the toilet paper route. Because people not only hoarded toilet paper, they hoarded baby formula. So hopefully we get into all of that in a little bit. But right now, what I've got here, and it's just confirmation of what I've been saying all along and what we all know. I'm so old I remember when Sammy Bad Breath sat there and shook his head like an old horse at the State of the Union when the President of the United States, Barack Obama, was speaking about the dangerous things that gang of thugs were then up to. And of course the right wing is doing everything in their power to well, no, this doesn't do anything. I mean, it's just overturning Roe and sending it back to the states. That's all it does. And well, you know, there'll still be some states where well-to-do Alabama white women can go and take care of their little problem. I really think we, you know, up at those highfalutin law schools, we really do need to examine and find a way to make sure that pregnant Republican women, white pregnant Republican women from Alabama, can't go to California, Massachusetts, New York, etc., and get their little problem taken care of. Own it, ladies. Own it. Well, you can't, can you? Because you're a second-class citizen, and you yourself are willingly owned. You're happy to be chattel, aren't you? Sure you are. But anyway, we all know that no matter how often they say, oh, you know, it's just, no. As Mike Pencilneck Geek said, you know, they're never going to quit. They're never going to go away. Well, I mean, they are going to go away because, you know, the cemeteries are full of people who couldn't be done without. Mortality is a thing. And maybe that's how we get to the Star Trek universe. Ooh, wait. New episode tonight. Yay! Sorry. Squirrel. But anyway, this is a case of believe them when they tell you who they are the first time. And the subject here is a blithering right-wing fascist who calls himself a Christian by the name of Vincent James. He's on Telegram, and he is, of course, a white supremacist, which means, you know, Trump supporter, which means, of course, Republican. And he said out loud what we have known all along, but it's nice when they admit it.
The Supreme Court has completely banned abortion, or they're going to move to ban abortion. They're going to ban sodomy. They're going to ban gay marriage. They're going to throw gays off roofs. Women lose, God wins, Christ wins, total victory incoming, hoes mad, total baby victory, let's go, gays are banned, sodomy's banned, gay marriage is banned, vinshallah, we shall have our theocracy very soon, let's go. Maybe in 5 years from now, we'll be seeing Alito throw them off of tall buildings. maybe 5 years from now, we'll see Alito and Justice Clarence Thomas if he makes it through his health scares, throwing them off of roofs soon.
Y'all, he's a Christian. And so he went on to say that, yeah, next is Obergefell. Yeah, he said, the written opinion implies that Obergefell versus Hodges, the legalization of gay marriage in the country, is next on the chopping block. Maybe after that we can go after sodomy, we can ban sodomy in red states, and maybe after that we can go after the fact that in a 1962 decision, a 1963 Supreme Court decision that banned God from public schools, maybe we can bring back God to public schools in red states. Oh, for God's sakes. God was never banned from the schools. But you know that. The only thing that was struck down in that regard was enforced prayer, which most of the Confederate states just ignored and kept on doing it anyway. All the way well up into the 1980s, I mean, that's the last I heard of these things, they were still doing daily Bible readings at the high school that I graduated from. So, but what do you want from a white supremacist? What do you want from a little Nazi? Wearing a mesh trucker cap with the outline of the state of Idaho on it. Yeah, I know. And thank you so much to Women Standing. We are now at 1665. The hole is $1,665 deep. Actually, it's a lot deeper than that, but we're just going to say that. Hope for the best. So, thank you so much. Thank you. We're beginning. But no, just because you've never heard of this little turd doesn't mean that he doesn't have an audience. And the fact that he does have an audience means there's a hell. It's like what we say about Nazis in the police and the military, white supremacists, Klansmen in the police and the military. It's like cockroaches. If you see one, you've got 1,000. And on this program, we've talked for years and years and years and years about the fact that we have a Nazi problem that is far worse than anything that most of the well-heeled are prepared to admit. And there's our proof. Fascists, again, fascists do not stop. Fascists don't give up and walk away. Fascists only stop when fascists are stopped. And we are precariously poised. Precariously. So we've reached the end of the second hour. And I'm going to take a brief break, and then we're going to come back and do some more conversation radio. But it being Thursday and all, let's check in with Brad and Desi.
It's Thursday, May 12, 2022.
It shows us yet again that the very survival of the reef is at stake.
Australia's Great Barrier Reef hit with another mass bleaching event. Global warming, a key factor in the emergence of new diseases.
Oh, great.
Plus,
water officials warn if we get to a tier 3 shortage, hard decisions will have to be made.
Arizona and California move to enact more severe drought restrictions.
All of those hard decisions and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
There really is no alternative here if we're to see a future for the reef and all the industries, the jobs, and everything that depend on it to be bringing our emissions down much faster than we are at the moment and move beyond fossil fuels and give the reef a fighting chance.
All he is saying is give reefs a chance. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, this has been getting worse and worse every year, year after year. Bad news for the Great Barrier Reef.
Indeed. In Australia, more than 90% of the coral reefs surveyed on the Great Barrier Reef suffered some amount of bleaching during the Southern Hemisphere summer, according to Australian government scientists. Coral bleaching is a stress response when the corals are effectively cooked by rising ocean temperatures driven by man-made global warming. If conditions don't improve, coral can die. Scientists say the bleached coral is still alive, and they hope most of the reef may recover. It is the fourth mass bleaching event in 7 years, but the first to occur under cooler La Nina conditions in the Pacific Ocean.
And why is it a bad thing if the Great Barrier Reef dies, other than, of course, the tourism and so forth?
Well, because coral reefs are nurseries for nearly a third of all marine species.
Oh, so that's all. As the coral reef goes, so goes the oceans.
Simon Bradshaw, research director of Australia's Climate Council, warned that the reef cannot take much more.
And the science is clear that its future depends on very aggressive, determined emissions cuts this decade from Australia and from the world. If we have any shot of a living reef in future, we have to be bringing emissions down very quickly through the 2020s.
Reef scientists also accused Australia's conservative, coal-promoting Morrison administration of trying to bury the findings amid a contentious national election. Also not great news, a new analysis published by the journal Nature has confirmed a link between man-made global warming and the spread of disease, concluding that climate change will cause new diseases like COVID-19 to emerge more frequently. The researchers say that climate change and habitat destruction are pushing species into densely populated areas, particularly in Asia and Africa, in turn increasing the chances of cross-species transmission of viruses known as zoonotic spillover, which can lead to new epidemics.
Well, you know, given that so many billionaires made so much money off the COVID pandemic, now you're just encouraging them to make things worse, frankly.
Here in the U.S., more water cutbacks are ahead for the Southwest, which is now in the grip of the deepest drought in 1,200 years, with major reservoirs at record low levels. Mm. In Arizona, water officials this week warned that the state will likely have to enact its next phase of drought restrictions as early as August, triggering even more cuts to the amount of water Arizona received from the Colorado River. Top state water officials. Official Ted Cook in a public meeting said residents must do more to conserve water by eliminating non-critical uses now to avoid deeper cuts later.
Most of the water use is outside the home. It's in the yard, it's pools, it's plants, it's lawns, it's things like that. So this is where we have some capacity to deal with the needs to do further reductions.
In California, the city of Los Angeles will now limit outdoor watering to just 2 days a week beginning in June. Officials had called on residents to voluntarily cut water use 15% to conserve supplies, but urban water use across California increased by nearly 19% in March.
It increased in March.
Yes.
Oops.
But some good news. The Biden administration on Wednesday confirmed that it has canceled 3 offshore oil and gas lease sales for the Gulf of Mexico and the coast of Alaska that had been scheduled to take place, and that likely ends all federal offshore lease sales through the end of the year. The Interior Department cited lack of interest from oil companies as well as legal obstacles limiting time to hold the sales.
Just more cancel culture.
And finally, a new analysis by the UN International Energy Agency finds that renewable energy deployment hit a new global record in 2021, despite supply chain disruptions and other speed bumps as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, and the world is on track to break that record in 2022.
Finally, a record we're happy to break.
Yes.
For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You've got the power now. There's a reason that this line can be.
Hey, thanks going out to Scott in San Diego and to Brian. Thank you both so very much. We are now down to 16:30 to go to fill in the massive fundraising hole. Thank you so much. And, well, if I don't even know what to say at this point. I don't. Thank you. All I can say is thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's go to the Skype line. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Robin. Wait a minute. Pardon me. It's that bubblegum cigar. I lit the thing and inhaled deeply, and I got bubbles coming out of all my holes. It's just not pretty.
Oh, dear.
Not pretty at all.
I could have gone all night without bubbles.
Well, all right. Well, it's better than what I had thought about talking about. How far back do we go, Robin?
You know,
2016, 2015, somewhere in there.
Maybe a little earlier.
Yeah, maybe.
What have I done now?
No. This is what I'm going to do. Have you ever known me to call in and in my speaking, have you ever known me not to be sincere and not to speak the truth?
No, I've always known you to speak it as you understood it.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I used to go to the Baptist church up in the upper left-hand corner above the podium or the altar or whatever they call that in the Baptist church. There was a little board with you could put changeable numbers in there every week, and they would have last week's attendance, and they would have last week's offerings and giving, and some other number, maybe the number of people that went to Sunday school the previous week. And I appreciate the fact that you let us know, you know, what the current need is and where we stand, and you don't actually give the number of people who kick in every week or every month or every day, but you do mention when somebody does contribute to the ongoing of the program.
Well, I try to acknowledge. That's why I begin the program with thanks to our subscribers, and through the course of the program, I thank the people who chip in a la carte. I don't think I miss many.
And you don't, and I appreciate that. I just took my hat off to you. I had my hat on when I started, and I just took it off because Brad and Desi were on, it will soon be turning into summer, I do my daily dance with the box fan. There's a ratio. It's the noise cooling ratio for when I call into the show.
Believe me, I actually know a little bit about that back here. Sometimes it's like it can be like working in a wind tunnel.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I don't want to make you think we're testing spacecraft in here. I mean, with everything else that goes.
Then there was the day Ferg was doing the flybys in the Sopwith Camel.
Oh yeah, I heard that. He looked rather dashing with that leather hat, the goggles, and that scarf.
The scarf is everything.
I wonder if he ran into Snoopy or the Red Baron while he was doing figure eights. Actually, not figure eights. He was spelling out EIGHT. And if you can do that in a Sopwith Camel,
you're doing something. That's yeah, something. I always look for the Red Baron when we're and the most recent incarnation of that was November 1st of this past year, when we were headed, you know, we did a couple of days at the beach before we went up and settled in Birmingham and got ready for my surgery. And it's just the damnedest thing. I mean, you know, directions, cardinal points, on the et cetera, on the compass rose. But when you leave Montgomery and start heading toward Mobile on Interstate 65 southbound, I guess there was no way for the engineers to get around it. But you get into it, and like I said, I thought of the Red Baron because, you know, he always came at you with the sun at his back and in your face.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking for the Red Baron all the way from about Montgomery, Alabama to Gulf Shores, Alabama, because if you're southbound on I-65, you're actually southwestbound. And there's just no way not to be facing it. If you're at the end of the day, you are driving right into the setting sun, and it is absolutely blinding.
Yeah,
I mean, it's worse than being in dense fog.
And if you have a bug encrusted windshield, well, you're
screwed.
Statistic.
Yeah,
yeah.
In fact, Miss Terry, my dear sister Miss Terry, went home to see her mama for Mother's Day. We talked a little as she was headed home, and I said, "So, which route did you take? Because there's several routes that run from the northwest corner of Alabama to, you know, the Gulf." And she said, "Oh, I took the two lane route." She said, "I knew I couldn't handle staring straight into the sun for 3 hours."
Oh yeah.
On I-65.
No, you don't want to do that.
Oh, it's brutal.
Yeah, see, that's another thing I don't miss about driving, and especially out here because the sun is pretty much unrelenting all year round except May gray and June gloom that we have before the actual summer kicks in. But, man, driving, looking into the sun for hours on end, no thank you. But the thing that I wasn't going to call today, but I've got a bug, as it were, in my anal pore, okay, back to anuses. I am really...
Is it a... could that be a pilonidal cyst? You know, Rush Limbaugh had one of those, and it kept him out of Vietnam.
No. I didn't need that to know better than to go anywhere near Vietnam. No, not that at all. My regions down there are just in tip-top shape. But the thing that got me going today, and it's kind of been on my mind in recent days and weeks even, is I guess it comes to me down to a question. Imagine a thought experiment. Imagine a world, Horn, and I hope the Congress. Oh, that's why I brought up the sign in the Baptist Church. I hope we have a well-packed congregation this afternoon, this evening, because I may step on some toes or upset people or make them go, ew, why is he doing that? But I
please don't run the audience away.
No, I'm not. That's not my intention. I've always been about not only speaking truthfully and speaking honestly, okay, when I call in, but also encouraging people. And this is what this ultimately is. It's an encouragement for people. If you imagine, I can't in my wildest dreams, and I took lots of drugs in my youth, so I was prepared for wild dreams. I can't imagine not having discovered this program. Now, we don't always agree. We don't always see eye to eye on certain things.
But we try to disagree without being disagreeable.
Well, not only that, but I never, at the end of any given edition of this program, there's never been a time when I've gone away knowing less than I did when I switched it on at the start of the show.
Isn't that awesome? Because the same thing happens to me.
Okay, well, yeah, it's a two-way thing. That's why it's communication radio. And you, like I mentioned the other day, we can communicate through our emails, we can communicate through our calls. But a very powerful and actually a needful form of communication with this enterprise is to keep the bloody thing going. And that's where the tote board comes in. It troubles me that people who apparently value this show because they call in and they listen and they email and I don't mean to harangue, but it troubles me. This should not be a heavy lift. This should be a light lift for a lot of people. And before I called, I sent in a little bit, because it troubles me when it's like people need to be taken by the ear to support something that they say they appreciate, get a lot from, and believe in. And it may not be my place to make these noises with my mouth, but by God, it's on my mind. It troubles me. It troubles me because I do have an imagination. I can imagine a time or a world, my world, that didn't include this program. And good, bad, or indifferent, it's a valuable resource. And I don't mean to browbeat people, but please, folks, if you're able to do it, and it's not a heavy lift, it's a slight lift for a lot of us if we work it that way, kindly kick in what you can, as often as you can, to keep this conversation going, especially with the midterms coming up, and especially with 2024 dead ahead, and especially with the Supreme Court acting like they don't have any goddamn sense, and they're not acting, for my money.
And I don't think they're acting when it comes to the fact that they don't give a good goddamn about half the people in this country.
Yeah. And a lot of us are in that half that they don't give a flying fuck about. So anyway, I'll shut up about it now. But please, folks, if you enjoy what goes on here, express that in a way that is tangible and different from all other ways that you express than you express your support. That's all I wanted to say about that.
That's very kind of you, and I appreciate it.
Well, and I appreciate that you appreciate it, because I know, you know, times are very iffy.
Of course I like to just say hello, Dimitri.
Yes, indeed. Do you have one of those little matchbox cameras? Like, what was his name?
Are you talking about Ambassador Kissoff?
Kissoff.
Now, how is it that that stays in my brain, but Sean Spicer disappeared?
I don't know. It's just like the author of the Russian manual about venereal diseases, Dr. Rachakov.
Dr. Rachakov, yes. Yeah. I've heard of him.
And it's quality programming like that that your money buys or rents here on the Horn.
Or you know, supports.
That too. I love hearing from Dave. He always has interesting tales. And Dave, truth be told, and this shows you that there is room for repentance and renewal. Once upon a time, I was a telemarketer. I may have spoken to you along the way, and neither of us knew it at the time, because I used to call all over the place.
Oh, so did I.
With my Time Life books and my, what else did I
sell? Hey, can I tell you about, let's see, what was it called? Enhanced AOL for broadband?
You know, I always...
That's the one the little imps and demons are waiting for me on.
They got their little pitchforks all...
Oh, they're stockpiling pineapples.
No, tell me more about the enhanced... What'd you call it? The AOL enhanced...
AOL enhanced for broadband.
Now, that had to be a CD-ROM, not just your ordinary 3.5.
Oh, no, it was a CD-ROM, yeah. And I think it was just AOL. But it works so much better when you don't get the ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a file that you can add to your computer when you boot up. Every day with my internet comes on automatically. I don't know how I would live if I had to deal with one of those modems and them fucking blinking lights and stuff and that noise. Who came up with that noise? That doesn't occur in nature.
Have you ever heard the inside of a telephone, Scott? You were talking about some drugs you took once upon a time.
The inside of a telephone? Well, I know the the phone, there used to be a noise that the phone would make. I'm talking about your corded phone, your landline.
Mm-hmm.
That if you left the phone off the hook for a while, it would sound like there was a little fire truck inside of your phone.
Well, as somewhat of an audiophile,
yeah,
you might be. Do you remember a brand of speaker called Klipsch?
I beg your pardon.
Klipsch, Klipsch.
The name rings a bell.
They had a lifetime warranty, and they held out that you could not blow up a Klipsch.
I bet you could.
I knew the guy who did. I know the guy who did, because he was engaging in some recreational psychedelics one day.
Yeah.
And there was a pair of Klipsch horns, and those things, oh my God, those things. And they, in their lysergic acid diethylamide induced curiosity, decided they wanted to hear what electricity sounds like.
Oh my Lord.
So they took the speaker cord and they wired a plug to it and plugged the speaker directly into the wall.
Oh dear.
Because they wanted to listen to electricity.
Does the house still stand? I mean, that's,
well, his house blew up, but that's a different story. That involves propane. His propane leaked. Had a beautiful house. His propane leaked. And, of course, propane is heavier than air, so it's down close to the ground. And out in the country, you know, no city water, so it was on a pump, and a pump uses electricity. And the last thing he remembers trying to say was, "Don't flip, boom!" Well, the Klipsch actually handled the 115 for a little while, like seconds, and then the smoke started pouring out of it.
Oh, gee.
So yeah, I understand. I didn't mean to divert you like that, but
no, that's all right. That was a fun little diversion. Fun with electronics.
Dude, I want to hear what electricity sounds like. Yeah,
I remember. And this is going back a ways, damn near 50 years, 1973. Next year will be 50 years. My first radio job, 6 to midnight, down in southern Maryland at a little one-lung, 3,000-watt FM station, 40-some miles from D.C. in southern Maryland. It's nearing the end of the shift. The midnight hour is just minutes away, and I'm coming.
You're queuing up High Flight.
No, we didn't do High Flight. What did I used to play? It'll come to me.
Oh, my last night at the Gospel Voice, you know, we always played the Star Spangled Banner over the VO. No, and my last night at the Gospel Voice, I queued up Jimi Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner.
Oh dear! Did you blow out the woofer or the tweeter or the?
Well, no, but I did apparently cause considerable consternation among some of the more conservative, and by that I mean the entire Gospel Voice audience.
You conjured up Satan himself in the...
Actually, that was me. and I mentioned it to my old buddy John, because he did mornings and I did nights. We were both high schoolers, and our hyper-super-duper double-secret probation charismatic tongue-speaking Christian program director, who had formerly been Johnny Q Midnight at another station in the area,
okay,
and was notorious for getting lit on the air, took the tone arm off of Stairway to Heaven once and said, "I like that so much, let's listen again," and put it right back down at the beginning. But he got Jesus, and we weren't sufficiently reverent, and one day he looked at me and said, "You and John are Satan's emissaries to WBTG.
Oh, my.
And I looked at him and said, "Boo."
Did you get a plaque or a commemorative card or anything like that?
No, he was just having a hard time. He was having a bad day. You know, the devil was tempting him or something. I don't know. Maybe he got a promotional copy of Led Zeppelin's In Through the Outdoor and got all triggered and had a relapse. I don't know.
Well, you know, I've never...
That'd be about the right time for In Through the Outdoor.
Maybe you can confirm or get provide the answer to a question I've had for some time, never having worked for a gospel station. I heard this rumor through the old radio grapevine that there for a while, Oral Roberts in Tulsa, Oklahoma, his organization, had a record division. I don't mean a record like police files. I mean a record like 45s and LPs.
Yeah, probably had some 16s in there.
Maybe. But I had heard this rumor for years at the gospel stations. The records on the Oral Roberts label were never very popular and not big sellers because the hole kept healing. Now, is there any truth to that? Or have I...
You went such a long way for that.
Yes, I know. I can't help it. But getting back to my brush with electricity, it was going on midnight, and one of my things before I would shut down the station at the night, I would go out of the studio, hang a hard right through the kitchen where the transmitter lived, and then behind the transmitter to the restroom where the AP machine lived. Now, I swear to you, I'm not making any of this up.
No.
This is...
No, you couldn't in a million years.
Yeah, and back in those days, in the early 70s, toilet tissue came in various colors. And one of the one that we used was the pastel yellow. And next to it on a cart label was not for AP use, next to the pale yellow toilet tissue, because the AP machine...
Yes, with the yellow fool's cap.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I would always go to make sure that the ribbon was still ribboning and that there was plenty of paper, because I never liked to change the ribbon and never liked to fuck with the
paper. Oh, Lord, yes. Testify. Anyway, yeah, yeah.
I hear on the speaker that my record is just about over, so I'm rushing through the kitchen behind the transmitter when a ball of fire pops out of the stereo. I thought maybe it was the end, you know, that clap or the trump or whatever the fuck it is that happens when time's up, boys and girls. That's the end of this episode. Well, I didn't know what to do, so I called the owner of the station. And he said, "You idiot, turn off the transmitter," which I did, and called the fire department. And they kind of fiddle-farted around. They didn't know what to do. And we were off for a couple of days because it was some special tube that had to be ordered from a faraway place at exorbitant cost. And a nightmare, just a fucking nightmare. But I'm glad I wasn't stoned that night, because a ball of fire coming out of anything, you know, in that condition, it's going to get my attention and frighten me. And I am easily frightened. So... I miss those days.
No, that indeed. Sounds like the night that smoke began to billow out of the ancient Gates broadcast board. The console that I were it was just pouring.
Yes.
And the guy named John that I mentioned earlier, he was in the process, a buddy of his, of trying to prank me. And then they saw the smoke come billowing out of the Gates board. And, you know, their heels took wing, as George W. Bush would have said.
Yeah.
And they got away real quick, and it was a similar conversation to what you just described. Well, shut down the damn transmitter.
Now, was it coming out of the vents on the top and the sides, or was it coming out where the knobs are?
No, it was coming out of the vents, and it had a decidedly electrical smell.
Oh, indeed it does.
Because, you know, at that time I hadn't met my buddy who wanted to know what electricity sounded like, but I sure found out what it smells like.
Oh, yeah, and it's distinct.
Emphasis on distinct.
Yeah, that's...
Why did they buy the yellow toilet paper and then have to put up a sign that said, "Do not use for AP"? That pink, blue, green?
Well, no, it was pale yellow.
I know, just like the rolls of paper for the AP machine. I get that.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, somebody's idea of a joke. The cool thing about having the AP machine in the bathroom, did I mention that?
No.
The fucking AP machine was in a corner in the bathroom. And, you know, you were never at a loss for things to read if you had to sit a while.
No, okay? It gives a whole new definition to rip and read.
Indeed. Rip, read, and wipe. That's...
I always found it a little scratchy.
Oh, Lord. There's nothing rougher in the
world. Yeah, there were little pieces of wood in it.
Yeah. Well, Russian toilet paper to this day is constituted not unlike AP wire copy paper.
Probably explains the instability of their politics.
Yeah, they could be such a happy land if they would upgrade to Charmin or something comparable. Jesus, how'd I get on that?
Running, but anyway, is running dogs of capitalist poopy paper.
Yeah, don't squeeze the pulpy. Use the real pulp. But anyway, I ought to write a book about my adventures in radio.
Oh, I think you should.
No, I'm not going to go there. Well, you know the station, the FM station where C-SPAN Radio lives in Washington, that frequency, 90.1 FM, used to be the Georgetown University station in the 70s and before and a little bit after. Now, you can imagine what fun an underground radio station on a Catholic-type university campus was like, with renegades running the thing. And
that must have been delightful.
Oh, our euphemism for getting stoned was, hey, you want to come help me take transmitter readings? And we did, because the transmitter room was the only place that had good ventilation and air conditioning. Oh, and as soon as the Jesuits could get rid of that license, because it was just short of pirate radio. It billed itself as alternative radio, WGTB FM, Washington, a service of Georgetown University. Rock and roll, baby. And
you did that so well.
Thank you. But I never was so stoned as I was after taking transmitter readings one time at WGTV in Washington. Yes, and I made it out to my car, my little red Vega, but once I got in it, and I didn't know what to do. And
that's even before Sensimilla comes along.
I'm telling you, I had never been that ripped. And I must have sat there. It seemed like 4 hours, but I'm sure it wasn't anywhere near that long. But it could have been. It might have been 4 hours. And I sat there finally, and I said, well, I guess I ought to go now. So I fished out my keys. I had my little pocket fisherman in my other pocket. And I just cast them in. A nice cast. It would be something out of American Sportsman if they had been in my car that day with Kurt Galdi or whoever
No, that's National Geographic.
Yeah, but anyway.
Look, it's a tiger, a really big tiger, and it is running right after me. Dum, dum. Yeah.
Yeah, I should probably...
Oh, geez, the singing.
Oh, yes. Well, that's all right. I think it's good to sing. It's good to sing me one of your...
We were sailing along on Moonlight Bay.
Thank you, Porky. The song that instead of the national anthem, I would sign off, because we signed off at midnight every night, Lou Christie singing Beyond the Blue Horizon, Waits a Beautiful Day. Do you know that song?
I don't think so, but I'm probably going to look it up after the program.
All right. Have you ever watched the movie Rain Man?
Yes.
It's part of the soundtrack.
Okay.
When they're going down the highway in the Midwest headed for Vegas. And they're going up and down those country, because...
All I remember is that radio-wise, 97X. Bang! The future of rock and roll.
You know what threw me on that? I watched that movie the other night. Hadn't seen it for years. They're in a 1948 automobile, vintage car.
Buick.
A Buick.
It's definitely a Buick.
With the top down, headed west, and the sun's going down, and they're listening. She's coming out of Cincinnati, headed west.
This is definitely not my underwear.
That car didn't have an FM radio, and 97X is an FM station.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Something supernatural was going on there, brother. Well, I didn't go. Or Sister Robin, who are you going to be today? Which hat are you wearing? Are you wearing the mini pearl hat? Ooh, well, that's you all over. No,
complete with price tag. That's you right. have no idea how many times I've left this house with a net going, wait, stop, stop, because I still got the price tag on.
And
transition is so exciting sometimes.
The way it used to be, women's jewelry would not have a sticker price tag on it. It would have a little teeny tiny price tag like you see on the prices.
Yeah, right that you
on
can only read with a jeweler's loop.
That, and you cannot get it off with a little piece of the thinnest possible string on earth, even thinner than kite string.
Oh, if you only knew the times I've heard that line.
What?
Never mind.
I wasn't trying to trap you. I was just... Well, anyway, if you watch Rain Man, along midway through the show in the car, out of the little speakers of the Buick, are you, Lou Christie... Beyond the blue horizon waits a beautiful day. Only he does it better. And he's got that falsetto voice in some of his songs. You know, my grandmother, on the other hand, had a falsetto teeth. But that's another story for another time, boys and girls. Well, how much fundraising have I done here?
We're down to 1630, so...
They're calling back for refunds with this content.
Yeah, by the way, Haley up in Arkansas wrote, and she said, did you find the Jimi Hendrix Star-Spangled Banner in the Gospel Station Library, or did you sneak it in? And that's even a story, because knowing what I was going to do, I bought a brand-new, fresh copy. So I would know that it was absolutely clean, and there wouldn't be any skips or pops or anything. I wanted it to be perfect.
Good for you.
And I took it with me that evening and took it home. And I think it was stolen somewhere in the first couple of years of college. So, the things you make me think about.
Well, and album covers, today, children, young people, you know, rolling their own, so to speak, they have no idea the role that album covers play.
Well, okay. One of the most influential cover art design houses. Do you remember what the name of it was?
No, I know that
Hipgnosis, HIP, as in dude, you're hip.
Yeah.
GNOSIS, gnosis, which means knowledge in Greek. So, you know, hypnosis. Hipgnosis. They did Dark Side of the Moon.
Groovy.
There's probably an archive out there somewhere of all their covers, but it was always innovative and really fun to look at, you know, when you were in a certain frame of mind.
Do you know which famous comedian, no longer with us, before he got into comedy, designed record albums, I think for Columbia?
No.
I'm pretty sure it was Columbia. Phil Hartman. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
He had something to do with the artwork.
Poor Phil.
Oh, God, yes. I still weep whenever I see him on the Best Of or whatever, SNL. Oh, what a senseless tragedy. And I'm thinking also with, is it Naomi Judd?
That
needn't have been. And I'm not going to point fingers or make judgments because I don't live in their house. I don't know what goes on there. But how can someone with a diagnosed condition have access to firearms? That doesn't compute for me.
Well, that's why I said what I said. You know, they're Kentucky folk. I mean, they live down outside Nash Vegas now, I presume. But it's just what? It is bone deep in the culture.
Well, culture notwithstanding,
the question arises, and I hesitate to even give voice to it because, you know, there's so much grief surrounding it, and they knew she was having trouble. I mean, then again, you know, in a place like Tennessee, it's easier to get a gun than it is to get a pack of chewing gum.
Oh, yeah.
And well, so if you take the guns out of Mama's house, Mama's just going to go down the road and get another gun.
Well, I guess that's a...
I mean, that's just a reality.
Yeah, that's where they are. I'm sorry to hear that, because I don't like it when anyone dies, especially good folks. And I especially don't like it when they see fit to do themselves then. Although I do believe that people should have that right or option. But then again, suicide, I think there's a famous quote, suicide is never a decision, never a choice to be made if you're not of sound mind or sound thinking.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There are different cultural aspects to it. During the Second World War, because of the honor culture of the Empire of Japan, and it goes back to the shogunate and the samurai, and at one point in time, the Imperial Japanese Navy had to send out a memorandum saying, listen, just because you lose a battle, you don't have to kill yourself. We don't have that many officers.
Yeah, well.
And then, of course, you know, ancient Rome, you know, you would be presented with an offer you couldn't refuse. You can get into the bath, make a nice warm bath, do, you know, rose petals, whatever you want. But the emperor wants you to unalive yourself. And if you unalive yourself like the emperor wants you to do, then he won't unalive the rest of your family.
Well, that's alluded to, and actually not alluded to, it's spoken of out loud in one of the Godfather movies. One of the local capos or whatever has been called to testify in front of Congress.
Right.
And the guy that Robert Duvall plays, the consigliere, the lawyer for the family, takes him aside, and they discuss, and someone brings up the ancient Romans, who it was a noble way out in some regards, because they knew if they did, their family were taken care of, but if they didn't, both they and their family were taken care of. Emphasis on taken care of. Isn't that how it worked?
Pretty much, yeah. So, but you know, it's not always. The Judd sisters seem to be quite confident in the fact that it was a product of their mama's mental illness. But it's, you know, it's not always an irrational act.
No, that's what I mean when I say.
That's why Oregon. I guess it is Oregon, isn't it? That has an assisted suicide law.
I believe so. And I think we have it to a different extent. If you are certifiably gonna die soon anyway, I think in California maybe they just tried to get it. And
that you can you can at least take charge of how you end.
Yeah.
I think about Ernest Hemingway.
Oh yeah. Oh good.
And you know, that's a situation a lot of people don't know. I will never not believe that he was successfully hounded into it by J. Edgar Hoover.
No, I've heard that.
He said, you know, he was, they thought he was just hopeless, you know, and, you know, how many plane crashes, how many head injuries? And we know that suicidality often comes with head injuries. We see it in, like, you know, NFL players.
Oh, yeah.
But he'd been in plane crashes, car crashes, you know, all kinds of stuff. And they thought he just had a case of the paranoids. Because he would say, you know, he would be sitting in a restaurant and say, look over there. That's the FBI. They're watching me.
It turns out it was.
And it turns out, yeah, they were watching him because of his time at La Finca Vigia in Cuba.
Yeah. And believe me, folks, in listening to me go on.
I'm nerding too, so.
I don't make fun of things like that, because they're truly serious matters. You know, I'm not making fun. I'm always interested in choices that people make and what leads them to make those choices. And I'm not talking about just that aspect of living and dying. I'm talking about politically. What is in the water in some of these places?
It's, well, I mean, it'd be nice if it was in the water, because then we could do something about the water. But in places like Alabama and Virginia and North Carolina, South Carolina, this is shit that's been baked in since 1619. Oh, and by the way, going back to hypnosis just for a minute, because I love it when we touch on things that other people, other members of the family, community, congregation pick up on. Lady B, and you know another jock. Hypnosis. I love the covers of Uma Guma, Momentary Lapse of Reason, and of course Dark Side of the Moon, and of course Animals, and the Man on Fire Shaking Hands of Wish You Were Here. Yes, Going for the One. Hell, even an Al Stewart album had a Hypnosis cover. The Modern Times album. And oh God, there were so many. One of them. Maybe Breakfast in America or Crisis, What Crisis, a Supertramp album. One of those was Hypnosis, or maybe both of them. It's just, wow. No, you just sit there and look at, and they were a design firm out of London.
Now that you mention that is ringing even more bells. And you know, that's fun with album covers. But
that was, you know, that was always the downside of buying a an 8-track tape.
Oh yeah, you didn't get the art.
Right.
You didn't get the art. Same thing with CDs to a certain extent. But you can not only have fun with album covers. You, of course, know of Monty Python's Flying Circus, okay?
Right.
Now, you know that they had a TV show in Britain, which was showed up on a lot of American PBS-type stations, which is how they kind of caught on here. But they also did record albums. And one of their record albums, I believe the first one, was called Monty Python's Matching Tie and Handkerchief.
I had it, and I know where you're going.
Tell the people what was special about one side of that album.
Well, it was at the time, or it was billed as such, the only three-sided single album.
Yes.
Because led to the destruction of God knows how many styluses and God knows how many copies of that album. But one side of the album had a parallel set of bands.
It was double tracked.
Yeah, it was double tracked, and you'd have to kind of futz around with the needle in order to get both sides of the single side.
In other words, when you would put the needle down on the LP, boys and girls, for you younger folks, depending on where the record had revolved, if you sat it down at one place, the needle would track through a whole different bit of content than what happened when the thing was revolving and you set it down and it tracked in the parallel set of grooves. Now, even if you're not stoned, it's pretty goddamn freaky. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, the first time you experienced
it. Oh, I don't know. Whoever came up with that was an evil genius.
Oh, yes. And see, these CD people and these...
But vinyl is quite the... is quite the rage now among the younger set.
Well, that's good. I like there's something about the audio quality of vinyl. If you get past the pops and hisses, this is why we must take care of our vinyl.
Dishwasher.
That too. But you hold it by the edges, and you especially don't hold it like you're picking up, you know, a pancake with thumb and a couple of fingers, especially if you've been eating pizza right before you decide to turn the record over. No, no, no. That's an LP no-no, kids.
Well, we've gone so far off in the weeds. Do you remember the vinyl soundtrack to Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
I never had it. But
this
I know the
is
movie.
Side two. If you want the beginning of the record, turn the record over. This is side two.
And one of the Python records, the first cut, maybe it's not the first cut, but it's a cut on the album, because some of them have cuts. Some of them are just one. Each side constitutes a cut. But it starts out with this frantic screaming, not this record, not this record, not this record, and the sound of a needle going across the groove. Exactly. There was a song that we were forced to play at one of the stations, the Adult Contemporary stations where I worked, and our music was on cartridges. Each cartridge, like an 8-track sort of, had a song or a jingle or a commercial. Well, I hated this song so much. It was a Frankie Valli, Four Seasons. I think it was My Eyes Adored You. It starts with a guitar, a very lovely, melodious guitar riff. Whatever song it was long enough. I made up a special cart that was only used on my program. And it was this melodious guitar leading up to whoever the vocalist was. And they, you know, Adult Contemporary, it was like, we called it codependency rock.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of air supply.
Oh, air supply. I've never heard
some REO Speedwagon.
Oh, God. But the way it was, I took the not this record, not this record, not this record, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the start of, or over the instrumental intro of the song. And the
weren't you just
director,
proud of yourself when you came up with that kind of stuff?
Yeah, until the program director said, "What is this shit?" You know, as he was always prone to say whenever I would do something naughty. I think I've got that on an air check. I've got to digitalize my old air work, because it needs to be online somewhere so that years from now, DJ wannabes will find out how it was done back in the wild and woolly 70s.
And give up on the idea of ever being a jock.
No, reinvent it. Go back to the roots.
Yeah, I don't think that can ever happen, Scott, because everything's automated now. You know, Clear Channel did inestimable damage to radio, because and that's why it's hard to develop a bench now, because you don't have any pimply faced 15-year-olds who just really want to work in radio.
Nowhere to learn it, the skills and the fun.
Right. Yeah.
This is KWFM and KWFM.
There is. I promise you, because I did it for a little bit. There is nothing less rewarding than voice tracking an automated station.
I've never done it, but I've heard tell.
It just sucks.
There was a thing,
because you're just recording breaks. You're not hearing the music. You're not getting the vibe. You're not into the moment. You're not
right.
You know. You're not. Because there's, you know, sometimes you do grab the mic boom and you are sitting there rocking and rolling with it, because that's you out on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only you, but the people listening are there there with you in real time. There was a little news segment or something, maybe it was on one of the magazine shows in the 90s, the late 90s, when Clear Channel was making its entry into broadcasting in a big way in terms of owning 2,000 stations or something, where they actually had the guy in Cincinnati, I think, which is where J-Core, which became Clear Channel, was located. And this guy's job was this: every day, Monday through Friday, he would do his own program. Then for the rest of the day, he would do voice track segments for like 2 or 3 different stations, using a different name each time, because the stations were different stations with different.
Yeah, no,
formats.
I did that.
And I can't think of anything more mind killing and soul numbing than doing that and being forced to call it radio.
I did a character that was they had a Cockney accent, and he had, he'd been permanently injured when he was a roadie for the Stones. I think he said something. Oh, that was not Keith made my spleen explode.
Did you get hit by a flying groupie?
And I voice tracked a few shows doing that because it was the classic rock station. And I had a blast doing it, but you know, there I am doing it at 11 o'clock at night, and it's going to roll at 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, jocking at night is different from jocking midday.
It's a whole different universe.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, I love these little trips down memory lane with you. But I would like to wrap up with one really, what I think is cool news story.
All right, I like cool news.
I am so proud of the kids at Lyman High School in Florida.
Lyman, like Frankie Lyman?
Yeah, like L-Y-M-A-N.
Wow.
And the journalism kids there, you know, the people who work on the yearbook, did a spread inside the yearbook because when Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis signed the Don't Say Gay bill into law, students at Lyman High School staged a walkout.
Good for them.
And it was deeply upsetting to the administration, and they thought nothing of it when they put their yearbook together and they included a 2-page spread of photographs of the walkout because it was something that happened in their academic life in that school year. I mean, that's what you do with a yearbook.
Yeah, it's recounting the year.
And lo and behold, they presented their draft copy of the yearbook to the principal, and the principal had a baby. Or kittens with crocheted tails or something like that. Because, obviously, they were saying gay in the yearbook. And you can't say gay in Florida.
Watch us.
And they said, unfortunately, we will not be able to begin distribution of the yearbook on May 9th like we said we were planning to do. Because some of the pages feature content that was not a result of a district-sponsored event.
Did they razor blade the pages out?
Well, at first they said, "We're going to go through every one of these yearbooks and cover the Don't Say Gay content with big stickers, so nobody can see it." And the two young editors, and I'm so proud of them, Ella Snyder, Ella Snyder and Sky Tiedemann were the two co-editors.
Great radio names.
Oh, yes. good solid consonants. And they were just heartbroken when their work was censored. The two young women said, "We didn't think we did anything wrong. We just documented what happened at our school. We took offense for our LGBTQ+ community, too. We felt like covering and censoring what they were protesting was silencing them."
Because it is.
And so the school district, you know, dug in its heels. And the kids looked at it and said, "Wait a minute, the only thing that's objectionable here is that there are pride flags." And then a representative named Carlos G. Smith, a Democrat in the State House there in Florida, the first LGBTQ Latino legislator in Florida, got hold of it and started raising hell. And then there was a big, ugly school board meeting that ran over 3 hours. And Superintendent Sarita Beeman said, "I want to be clear to each and every student that this was not about the Lyman High School administration looking to try and target any student to try and silence any voice. This is instead a situation where there was an issue that was not caught earlier in the required review."
Oh, now it's a situation.
Yes, and you know, it's just, well... And so then the community raised hell, and they raised hell against the school board. The school board raised hell with the superintendent, and they came up with a new sticker, a small sticker placed at the bottom of the yearbook page to denote the event being depicted was not school-sponsored. Oh, they're just afraid that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis is going to have such a big old sad.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
So the students. So the bottom line is the students won.
Good. The book 1984. Aren't there depictions in that novel, which I haven't read for years, of pneumatic tubes with content that is used to replace content that Big Brother or whoever doesn't think should be going out? Isn't that what we accuse Soviet Russia of doing?
Yes.
In terms of content?
Yeah, exactly.
Not too many years ago. If it's within living memory, then it's in the recent past for some of us. Okay? And where in Florida is this?
Seminole County.
See, my only hope for that is you like kids to stick around where they grew up, but sometimes it's so bad they can't do it. Because either for jobs or attitude, they've got to go somewhere else to be who they are. Authentically and realistically and in 3D. But I hope a number of those kids who go through this grow up and stay there and get elected or appointed to the fucking school board and just revolutionize things. Take things back to the way they were, where people were allowed to have different outlooks and different takes on the same thing. And everybody be okay with the fact that we didn't have to agree all the time.
Right. And just one more thing, because this is good news too. It's just
good news.
It's just really gross and creepy in the setup.
Oh, I like your setup, so.
So you remember Josh Duggar of whatever it was, 19 kids and counting or whatever it was on.
Well, you forgot his nickname, Josh Rabbit Duggar.
Well, remember, he's the Duggar kid, and they were such good Christians, and they had such good Christian values on TV. Well, he was the Duggar boy who diddled his own sisters, sexually abused his own sisters.
Jesus, I don't remember that.
And the family covered it up. And then they sent him off to some Christian ranch or something, and, oh, look, he's all better. Well, he was found guilty back in December 2021 of receipt of child pornography and possession of child pornography, because this guy is really gross. And it was a federal prosecution, and it's coming around to sentencing time, and the federal prosecutors walked in. This is how nasty these Christians are. The child pornography that he possessed included children as young as toddlers.
Jesus. That's deep into twisted fuck territory.
Yeah. Oh no, this is a sick bastard, and you know he'll never be okay. Some of the prosecutors who have considerable experience dealing with this said it was the five worst images they've ever had to investigate in their career. Of course, I don't think Marsha is going to be bringing this up, because, you know, he's one of her own. I mean, this dude actually worked for a Republican Christian family organization in D.C. 32-page document filed with the court in support of the harshest sentencing the court could give, which is 20 years. And the sentencing memo from the prosecution says, as an initial matter, Duggar used multiple means, uTorrent and Tor, to search for and download CSAM, that's a short child sexual abuse materials, of a sadistic nature.
Oh, my. God.
Including child sexual abuse materials depicting prepubescent minors being subjected to violent abuse. Moreover, he went to great lengths to conceal his conduct from others, presumably so he could engage in it undetected and undeterred.
Yeah, the name of the show on TLC was 19 Kids and Counting. It was all about how Christian the Duggars were and how moral they were.
We must do it for the children, Robin, don't you know?
Yeah.
We must preserve the children.
And he sexually abused multiple children while he was a juvenile himself. His victims, four in total, were all prepubescent females, including several who were significantly younger than him. And the good news part of this is that the prosecutors are asking for the max, and nothing else will do. But again, don't look for this story to show up on Fox or be talked about by Tucker Carlson or Frau Ingram or the Hannity job.
Well, of course not. That's not what they do.
And you know, and the way that karma and irony work out is that of course the during the confirmation hearings for Ketanji Brown Jackson, the right wing was having a hissy about her being lenient on child porn defendants.
Yeah. Well, again,
he's facing 20 years, and I'm still waiting for the press release from Ted Cruz or Marsha, demanding that he get all 20 of them and serve them all without chance of parole. I'll be waiting a very long time for that, Scott.
Yeah, well, wait if you must, but don't hold your breath.
No, I don't look. I look good in some blue, but not that blue.
Well, when we need your aerated voice, R-rated voice, some sort of voice to occupy these waves of air. And I appreciate. I see that it's time to go, and I thank you.
Oh, well, you got some praise. Tom out in sunny San Rafael, and thank you, Tom. I went to the mailbox, and I saw that. So we're actually down to 1590, and that was the frequency of the last AM radio station I worked at, AM 1590.
Never did a 1590. I only did one AM station, now that I think about it. The rest was all FM.
But anyway, Tom says, great conversation. This is why Sister Carol Baker said, I wish I could remember the 70s. They were so much fun.
Oh, they were just...
Yes, she did say that. Yeah. And
speaking of mailbox, did you ever get my goodie?
The video?
Yeah.
Yes.
Blu-ray.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Now, please tell me you've never seen it before.
I have not. I have not.
Good. You and Annette are in for a treat.
And in fact, I'm going to... get out the laptop that has the Blu-ray player on it, and we're going to watch it.
Yeah, it is a movie that I discovered in the late 80s. It's called 1,000 Clowns with Jason Robards and the guy who was the voice of the car that talked, and a young boy named, his character name, when he could make up his mind, was Nick, Barry Gordon, child actor of the 60s. If you want something to really pump up your optimism and give you a silver lining to life.
Oh, I'm definitely looking forward to it.
I stumbled upon it watching the Sunday movie, Saturday afternoon movie on Channel 5 in Washington one day, and it resonated with me. And I've tried to turn as many people as I can onto 1,000 Clowns because it's just a lovely love story. And funny and cute. It's a little dated. It was made in 65, and the play goes back to 59. It was on Broadway before it was a movie. But if I'm ever in a play, if you ever get to be in a play again, see if they'll put on 1,000 Clowns, because you could be Sandy now. You wouldn't have to be...
if only Ferg were in here. He does such a good John Travolta sing. Sandy!
All right, we're over time. So good night, Robin, and good night, Horn family. And thank you for your forbearance in my little rant earlier. I didn't mean to screech and preach. I just...
No, you're fine. You're fine. And by the way, you do have a note coming in from Lady B. Robin is right. Sadly, radio is dead. It hurts because, my God, it was my whole identity. Voice track a 4-hour show in 20 minutes. Been there, done that.
I remember carts and, of course, reel-to-reel, splicing tape with a razor blade, white tape on the bottom, flawless edits, stack your carts according to playlist. Dave Mason, We Just Disagree radio edit was 250. Take you right to the top of the hour. God curse you if you didn't cue your fucking carts. Love you and Scott. DJ for life. Wind be at your back and no static at all.
Amen.
Oh, right God. On. Lady B.
All right.
You're everything. And every bit of that was God's honest and unfly-blown truth. And, okay. Lady B once kept me from going insane trying to remember a song. And she remembered it right off the bat.
I remember that.
Brothers Johnson. And I think it was Brothers Johnson, wasn't it? Everyone's a star, something like that.
Cornelius Brothers and Sister Rose.
But she just brought something to mind, talking about take you right to the top of the hour. There was an instrumental that we used, and something in me thinks it was the Sal Soul Orchestra, but it wasn't. And it was so 70s. It had the swirling strings. There was no vocal, and part of it. Was the melody was reminiscent of Orleans and Dance With Me.
It wasn't Love Unlimited or
I think it, it well I thought it, it it's either Love Unlimited or the Sal Soul Orchestra.
Well,
we cheated with that instrumental to get up to the top. Well, it's burned into my brain everything except the title and the artist.
Well, if it comes to you, let me know, because I want it burned into my head, too.
I remember one night, I even went looking for it on YouTube, and yeah, I guess I just searched wrong, but I couldn't find it.
Robin, I couldn't hit a network without that timing a record.
Yeah, I mean, it's the one kind of math I can do.
And the top of the hour promo into the next hour, Legal ID, was 17 seconds. And here I am trying to, and thank God we weren't on delay. I wouldn't know whether to shit or wind my watch. And the folks not in radio won't get this, but a back timing a record, you start if the instrumental is 3 minutes long, but you only really have to fill a minute and 40 seconds, you start it at 3 minutes, come out of your current thing, and then fade it up. It'll take you to the top of the hour, or at least to the...
At least in theory.
If you've got a 17-second promo of next hour Legal ID on tape, and you insert the pertinent part, well, you're screwed if you're me, because I couldn't back time worth a damn, unless it was just the music, live ID at the top. Here's NBC News and Russ Ward, or whoever the fuck was doing it that day. God. Did I say I was going to go?
Yeah, and I didn't, and then I didn't let you. But
but that's all right. I one day we're going to have to just do all radio all the time, and get Lady B on the line and any other people who have done radio before, because there's nothing.
And listen to a bunch of old jocks wax rhapsodic.
That's right. I remember. I knew the guy who invented the slip cue.
and coming up with the genius segue.
Oh, God, yeah. I knew Terry Moore was her name. The last I heard, she was in St. Louis. I worked with her in Kansas City. She would do the whatever key the first song was, she would have a complimentary key or the same key for the startup of the next tune. And I marveled at that. I just banged those fucking tunes together any which way I could, you know? But I marveled at people who were that creative. And she always worked with her shoes off. Maybe that's how she did it. I don't know.
I remember doing Midnight Shift, but the console area was kind of U-shaped, but it was narrow enough that I could put the palms of my hands on to either side of me on the countertop. And I was in really good shape back then, because I would bring myself up off the ground, pull my knees up under me, my calves up under me, and sit there and do presses.
Dear Lord.
You know, tighten the tummy and,
guns, and it was a different day. And then I'd get off work and had my golf clubs in the car, and I'd head to the golf course and play 36 holes.
And you worked with turntables at that
school? Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, well, see, I would go ass over tea kettle, and the fucking needle would scratch across the album, and the program director would come in and fire me again. I couldn't do a push-up, a sit-up. I'm lucky to
stretch. You just caught the, and fire me again.
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky to have the strength to go down the hall and rip the copy off the fucking AP machine. I mean,
I was just desperate to stay awake, because you're okay from like midnight to 4-ish.
What's wrong with you? Coffee and chain smoking. And
well, yes, absolutely. But then 4 to 5, you're kind of okay. And then 5 o'clock hits and you got to get everybody all pumped up for the morning guy coming on.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about day parts are different. Midnight is a different vibe, and you're working different vibes on the midnight shift. Midnight is a different vibe from 5 a.m., and when you're all worn out, half out of your mind on caffeine, and then you kind of perk up and be all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, because, the morning guy hated it, because sometimes I'd just fuck with him. And the last song before the top would be, something morose, morose and minor key is like, I fucking hate you.
Another one of these upbeat, goddamn up-tempo records.
Get Don on the phone. And where's those pictures I was supposed to see? I don't know. That works its way into every conversation. Scott, you have a wonderful evening,
you
my friend.
You too, Robin, and good night, Horn family. And kick in a couple of bucks, and you'll feel better for it.
Amen. Thank you.
All right. Good night.
See you, Scott. Old DJ Radio. Damn, it's fun. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, damn, Josh Duggar has Republican state representative written all over him. Oh, he had dreams. And I told Brother Deacon Asa, yep, they'll elect him quick as he gets out in the joint. I wonder how they'll like him there in the federal stir when they find out why he's there. Lee in New York says, Cockney accent. It's hot chocolate. Thank you. Everyone's a winner. Thank you, Lady B. Cockney accent. Richard Dawson told his story of audition as Newkirk on Hogan's Heroes. He did an accent that he was told they could not understand. He did a Cockney accent, and they were fine with it. When the Beatles became famous, Dawson said that they were the same accent as his first accent. Oh, a Liverpudlian accent. Okay. Lady B answering the question. That's it. Oh, yes. I feel so much better now. Thank you, Lady B. That's twice now. It was hot chocolate. Everyone's a winner. And that instrumental was Barry White and the Love Unlimited Orchestra, Love's Theme. Yes. And as soon as the program's over, I'm queuing it up. Thank you, Lady B. And thank you to everybody who jumped in this evening. Did a little extra overtime radio since I missed yesterday and missed 2 hours of Tuesday. And I don't feel at all bad about it. So, thank you. We are down to 1590 to go to fill in the fundraising hole, and I hope we can at some point. Again, thanks to Ben Birch, because, we're back up on both White Rose Society and HeadOn.live. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Be a great time to jump in and become a new subscriber, by the way, because, Zed every month doubles the first month's subscription for brand new subscribers. And so if you subscribe at $10, well, that's about a half a stick of chewing gum per program. And Zed turns your 10 into 20. Thank you, Zed. Looking forward to seeing you at the Horn Inn. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody who's coming to the Horn Inn. But thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks for getting us started this evening, Christopher. Thank you to Women Standing. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Tom and Sunny San Rafael. Thank you, Scott. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff.
Just one second here.
Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way in about 40 minutes at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now proudly a union shop, please reach out. Ask your member of the House of Representatives to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. We need to get it passed by the House this year. And times are running out. Please stay safe. Get your boosters. Wear your mask when you're in places that call for mask wearing. Today was shot day, so I masked up to go to the doctor's office. Dropped $375 on blood work today because we have to monitor my hormone levels about every 3 months. I think we're about to move to every 6 months at $375 a pop. Because, of course, uninsured. Keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet, just like Paul from Parts Unknown says. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. And, of course, if some creepy dude from Arkansas wearing an old raincoat walks up to you saying, hey, you want to see some pictures? Avoid that Duggar like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all.